From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trying to come up the fence is Hierarchy with a late bid. In the center, Coffee Maker is coming to. Dairy Name from the back of the pack is flying. Here's the wire. It's Twilight Gleaming. Twilight Gleaming has done it. And it's Echo Zulu set down for the final furlong, opening up by four to Robbie. And Juju's Map battling for second behind a no-doubt champion. Echo Zulu wins the Next Jets Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies by 5.5 lengths.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Cachet to catch, a furlong to do it. Koala Princess closing on the outside. Pizza Bianca's coming up through two. It's a wild finish here. Also coming is Haughty. Who's it going to be? Pizza Bianca gives Christophe Clément his first Breeders' Cup. Modern Games is now moving on the far outside. He's kicked it in, and he's closing down the center of the course with one furlong to run. Grafton Street to catch. Modern Games on the outside, closing that gap. Dakota Gold and Slipstreamer Nets, but it's Modern Games. Modern Games will win the Juvenile Turf.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Just when you think you've seen it all in thoroughbred racing, here comes yesterday's Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Miscommunication, confusion, incompetence, disgraceful. All legitimate ways to describe what took place prior to the start of that race yesterday afternoon at Del Mar. I'll have plenty more on that coming up in just a minute. But first of all, good morning once again. Welcome to a special Breeders' Cup edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, all across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and around the country, and streaming to a worldwide audience at horseracingradio.net. The 38th Breeders' Cup World Championships kicked off yesterday on what was billed as Future Stars Friday, all five juvenile races being contested yesterday. If you had told me before the start of those races that Bob Baffert, standing in the winner's circle, accepting his fifth Breeders' Cup Juvenile Trophy, which, by the way, equals his good friend Dwayne Lucas for most all time, if you had told me yesterday morning that wasn't going to be the story everyone was talking about today, I would have taken that bet. And I would have felt pretty confident that that was going to be the headline pertaining to yesterday's races, especially among non-racing mainstream media outlets. I have no problem with Bob Baffert and his talented three-year-old colt, Corniche, winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Although it does put owner Peter Fleur of Speedway Stables in the position now to make some very difficult decisions going forward if he wants to compete in next year's Kentucky Derby with this horse. Remember, as it stands now, horses trained by Bob Baffert are unable to earn points toward a spot in the starting gate for the Kentucky Derby. Corniche would have already banked 30 points with his wins in the Awesome Again Stakes and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. In some years, that's already enough to get you into the starting gate. Instead, he's sitting at zero because of the man that trains him. And as it stands now, if Fleur does want to run in the Derby next year, and let's face it, this horse will have to stay healthy, and he's going to have to continue to progress into his three-year-old season. There is a lot of time between now and the first Saturday in May. But if he does want to be in that race on the first Saturday in May, he's going to have to move Corniche to another trainer, as it stands right now. But I have no problem with Bob Baffert winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, considering the extensive security and additional testing his horses have had to endure this week, paid for by Baffert himself, by the way. What I and so many people in the sport have a problem with is the irresponsible, disgraceful, incompetent occurrences, which led to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf contender Modern Games being allowed to run for purse money only. And once again, who pays the price for horse racing's mishandling of a situation? The betting public. We spend a lot of time talking about building up trust and getting people to be comfortable with our sport. Building up trust with the betting public. Usually it's pertaining to medication rules. We throw around words like integrity and transparency. Well, yesterday, on one of our sport's biggest stages in front of an international audience, our sport once again failed to practice what it preaches. Integrity and transparency, those are just words unless you practice what you preach. Jockey William Buick, who was aboard number one Modern Games, who was announced as a scratch before eventually being determined to be healthy and allowed to run for purse money only, explained to TVG's Alicia Hughes after the race that normally horses are backed out of the starting gate when an incident occurs. In this case, the incident was Albar rearing up in the stall next to him, the number two stall. Instead, the gate handler opened the front of the stall that Modern Games was in, and he came out the front. In standard protocols, and this is standard, the vets usually take that to mean that a horse broke through the starting gate and may be injured. So they take a very close look at those horses. When the gate handler explained to the vets, and William Buick did too, that that gate, the front of the gate, was intentionally opened in an attempt for Modern Game to get out of there safely. Well, that's where the confusion and the inexplicably poor handling of the situation began. It took a while last night, but the California Horse Racing Board eventually released their statement on the incident. And here it is. After number one, Modern Games, reared up and hit the back of the gate, number two, Albahar, flipped over and became lodged underneath the starting gate. The scratch of number two, Albahar, was relayed to the stewards, and the horse was taken out of the wagering pools and appears uninjured. Good news there. The veterinary staff then relayed a second scratch of number one, Modern Games, based on initial observation. This was also relayed to the stewards, who removed the horse from the wagering pools. That's it. The horse was scratched. After further discussion, here is where things really go bad. After further discussion and observing number one Modern Games, that horse declared fit and racing sound, and this fact was relayed to the stewards, who, pursuant to CHRB Rule 1974, allowed the horse to run for purse money only. This is after he had been scratched and taken out of the wagering pools, folks. The CHRB and the Breeders' Cup are reviewing current veterinary and scratching procedures to ensure that this does not occur going forward. The rule, by the way, that they refer to, 1974, reads like this. If a horse is removed from the wagering pool due to a tote error, or due to any other error, and neither the trainer nor the owner is at fault, the horse shall start in the race as a non-wagering interest for the purse only and shall be disregarded for parimutuel purposes. That's the way that the rule reads. So they fall back on that rule after the horse has already been scratched and taken out of the wagering pools. And, of course, the worst-case scenario happens. The horse wins. They would have much rather have seen Modern Games run dead last. The issue becomes moot at that point. That's not what happened. Modern Games, much the best in that race. He wins, and this is where the betting public, once again, ends up taking it on the chin. Breeders' Cup sent out their statement last night, and it says, if a horse is removed Says Breeders' Cup races are subject to CHRB rules, including Rule 1974B, which states, if a horse is removed from the wagering pool due to a toe error or due to any other error, and neither the trainer nor the owner is at fault, the horse shall start in the race as a non-wagering interest, blah, 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 blah. You just heard that rule. You just heard that rule. So they quote the rule, and Breeders' Cup continues to say, the decisions leading up to today's Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf were made under the authority of the CHRB. Please refer to the advisory put out by the CHRB earlier this evening for additional details and direct any further questions directly to them. We thank the CHRB for their thorough review of the situation. We regret the impact this has had on the betting public. You know what a no-look pass is in basketball? You ever play that game, Hot Potato? Yeah, that's what this statement is. It's chicken, you know what. Essentially, Breeders' Cup throwing their hands up in the air, saying, hey, not our fault. It's our event. We take over the facility. We always say it's our event when we take over the facility. This ain't our fault. Ask the guys over at CHRB. Go talk to them. You got to be better than that. You have to come out with a stronger statement than that. Just another level of incompetence with the way that this entire situation was handled. And once again, the betting public taking it on the chin. You know, the really disappointing part is that it overshadows some unbelievable performances on the racetrack. Echo Zulu. She could not have been any more brilliant. She is, as they say, poetry in motion. How good was she? That's what we should be talking about. We should be talking about the horse Corniche and the fantastic front-running ride Mike Smith gave Corniche to win that race. Those are the things. We should be talking about Christoph Clément, who's won well over 2,000 races in his career. What was he, 0 for 40 coming into this year's Breeders' Cup? Bobby Flay said on NBC before the race that maybe the greatest trainer never to win a Breeders' Cup race, and I think that's legit. Well, Pizza Bianca won for Bobby Flay, trained by Christoph Clément. He breaks through. What a moment for the Clements. That's what we should be talking about, but we're not. We're talking about incompetence once again in the sport of thoroughbred racing on the big stage. Very disappointing. All right, well, here's what's coming up on the show here. I'm going to spend plenty of time talking about Breeders' Cup Saturday because we do have 9 more championship races to go today, and we should be excited about that. Nick Sallusto, bloodstock agent, is going to be with me coming up in just a few minutes. He is going to talk about Bella Sophia, who they have been part of. Bella Sophia taking on Gamine in today's Philly and Mare Sprint. Going to be joined by Dustin Fabian of Express Bet and First Bet. He'll come up at 8:40 to talk about some of the big races later today. He'll also look back on the incident yesterday, share his thoughts. You're going to hear from John Velasquez and Joel Rosario later in the program. Going to talk with Faze Tipton's Boyd Browning right around 9:20. 9:40, our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. That is Ed Mosier Jr. Spent an hour with him on Trainer Talk this past week. He was tremendous. You'll hear an excerpt from that interview. In the Room with Sean Clancy comes up in hour number 3, as does Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. And then at the end of the program, I ask, they answer, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. You won't want to miss it. That comes up at right around 10:30 Eastern time. Busy show. Kicks off with Nick Sallusto next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for 3-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when blood vessels in the lungs rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressure on the inside of the vessels and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal pressures, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside. See the science at flarestrips.com.
Hi, this is jockey Drayden Van Dyke. You're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And now they're in the stretch. Illumination closest to the rail with the lead. Bella Sophia is all out on the outside in second. And then Super Sensational and Search Results. And there's the move by Bella Sophia to take over the lead in deep stretch. A 16th to the finish. It is Bella Sophia with Super Sensational giving chase in second. Bella Sophia with a top-notch effort to win the Grade 1 Longines Test. Super Sensational was second, Search Results third, and the seven furlongs, 1 minute, 21, and 2/5 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John Embriel with the call of the Grade 1 test at Saratoga earlier this summer. That was Bella Sophia, and boy, was she good that day. She returned to win the Grade 2 Gallant Bloom on September 26th at Belmont. And what's that get her? Gets her a date with Gamine in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint coming up later this afternoon. And she is 5-2 on the morning line. It's a short field of five. And for bloodstock agent Nick Sallusto, he would love nothing more than to see Bella Sophia get her nose to the wire first. And that's what we'll be hoping for later today. And he is with me now on the Equine Forum. Nick, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing really well. And, you know, that call from John Embriel has to, when you hear that call, that has to bring back some unbelievable memories for you.
Oh, my God. It takes me right back to that moment in time when she just came off the turn and started widening. And I watched the race with my wife and my three very young girls, and they absolutely saw me go absolutely wild rooting her home. And the expression on their face actually told the whole story.
You know, you have been part of so many Grade 1 winners over the year and greatest stakes winners over the years in your career. But you have a filly like this who comes out of an allowance victory at Belmont, steps up into Grade 1 company. How proud of you, or how proud of Bella Sophia were you after she pulled off that victory?
You know, it's what we get up in this industry for, not just myself, but everybody in this business gets up every day and works tirelessly to try and have happen. So when it happens, it's just such a tremendous release and such a feeling of satisfaction. And then you pair that with your joy and your attachment for the animal, and putting those two feelings together, just to be proud of her and watch her achievements go on. When you pair those two things together, it's the most amazing feeling that I've ever experienced. Which is why I think we get up every day and we continually chase it to try and repeat. So, but I'll never stop trying. I can promise you that.
She is a filly that came through your program, which makes it even more special. Tell me a little bit more about the early days of Bella Sophia.
Well, Mike, you know, I bought a training center in Morrison, Florida, not long ago this year. And, you know, partly to have a bigger say in how these young horses actually make it to the trainers that they go to. So to have one that we picked out at a two-year-old training sale, bring home, and then spend the next 7 months trying to put her in the right place for somebody like Rudy Rodriguez to be able to advance her and have it work on this level, it's just, it means everything to me on every single level of what I do. And I think it really solidifies what we're trying to do with the training center. So to have that happen for me and my crew that works tirelessly every day, it's everything.
What led you to open the training center? Was it just the fact that you wanted to be able to place the horses with the right people and you thought you could control that if you had the training center?
Well, I'm kind of a guy who likes to butt in a lot, so I kind of got tired of doing that, and I just, you know, issued myself a challenge and said, so if you really feel like you want things done a certain way, there's only one way to do that. And it's been a great new challenge for me. It definitely takes me back to my early days and my training roots following my father around Belmont Park. And it's been great for me for my career, but not only that, it gives me an opportunity to stay in one place a little bit longer during the year, which has really been amazing for me because I get to spend more time with my young children and my family. And that's really been one of the major things that I've gained from that personally. So it's been great.
Joined by Nick Sallusto here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bella Sophia, who came through his program, you just heard him talk about her. She goes in the Philly and Mare Sprint later this afternoon. You know, there was an article on Blood Horse Daily that was written by Lenny Shulman this past summer, and Lenny talked about your new venture with the training center, Thorough Stock, in Morriston, Florida. And Nick, he referred to you as racing's version of Shohei Ohtani, who, as we know, is the spectacular baseball player. Because of the fact that you've had so much success on one side of the fence, on the bloodstock side, and now you dive into the other side with the training and the breaking facility. Do you look at yourself in that way when you approach the game and in the industry?
Well, I think that the more you know in this business and the different facets of the business, the better opportunity you give yourself to increase your chances of success. So I really believe that one part of this business ties into the next and the next, and the more parts that you play in, I think give you the better opportunity to come out on the right side of things. I think when you attend all the auctions, the weanling sales, the yearling sales, the breeding stock sales, you really increase your knowledge about every single part of the business on a regular basis. So, and then when you add in the components of being at the two-year-old sales, buying young horses, being involved in tin hooking, and now being involved in training, you know, you really give yourself the best opportunity to come out the other side. And that's really what I'm like. That's my whole philosophy. I think if you can keep increasing percentage points in any game or any business that you play in, well, those little percentage points, they add up at the end of the day. And that gives us a few more opportunities a year. Well, then I've just increased my chances. So, and in this particular case with Bella Sophia, she actually fits that model as well as a horse could possibly fit that model. She was a filly that was a little bit on the difficult side when she came through the two-year-old sale process, and we got her home. We were patient. We really babied her through that whole process, and I feel like we made a difference there. So that's kind of case in point of being involved in every portion of this game made a difference.
You mentioned your father, Justin, and he was a trainer on the East Coast. You, of course, talked about following him around at the racetracks in New York and New Jersey as a young man. Are there things that you picked up on from being around your dad and his operation that are helping you today now that you embark upon this new venture?
Absolutely. I think my philosophy was born out of my father's teachings. And, you know, the animal was always put first. My dad always preached, you know, in terms of the care. There's no extreme that we cannot go to give these horses what they need, whether that be from a nutrition standpoint, from all the latest therapies to sitting down and really custom tailoring their training program. There's no length that we would not go to get these horses to perform at an optimal level. And I think that is, you know, very much a reason for the success that I've been able to have in this business. So I think you're right on target there.
Yeah, I'm going to brag on you for just a minute here, Nick, because we talk about Bella Sofia and she's in the spotlight today, but your success goes back to the likes of Derby winner Big Brown, and you've been involved with champion Caledonia Road and Grade 1 winners Mind Control, who was supposed to be in the Breeders' Cup, and we'll have to see him another day. But Arklow and Beach Patrol and Violence and Cantharos, the later two are both stallions in Kentucky now. You know, your success is not overnight, and it's only come through hard work.
Well, thank you, Mike. I really appreciate you saying that. And I think that's really most of it, Mike. It's just hard work. I try and stay very disciplined about what I buy. We try and work hard and stay behind these horses after we purchase them. And then we need the help of, you know, great trainers to finish what we start. And we also need really great clients to be patient and support us through all the trying times and the bad moments, because, you know, we all know that there's plenty of those, and to continue to play through all those difficulties. So, I think that's what it takes.
How often are you asked about Big Brown and that run that he took you guys on?
I think when people actually realize I had something to do with it, and then they naturally have a lot of questions about whether what's that like, or, you know, why did he get beaten at Belmont, and, you know, all of those natural curiosities. He's a horse that intrigued so many people. Still one of the best talents I've ever, you know, seen and been fortunate enough to be around in my whole career.
What was it like watching him win the Derby?
Surreal. You know, you don't really ever believe you're going to win the Kentucky Derby, and then when it actually looks like a possibility, it's very overwhelming to think that it's going to happen. And then there was a lot of emotion, and you know, very, very emotional moment for me, and in my life and in my career. It was a breakthrough for me. So that's a very emotional moment for me. And to share it with some people that I really enjoyed being around, that was the icing on the cake.
Let me ask you a little bit about Mind Control. I mentioned that he was scheduled to be in the Breeders' Cup, but he is going to have to skip this event. We'll see bigger and better things from him up the road. But he came out of that big win in the Parks Dirt Mile last time out on September 25th. Tell me more about Mind Control and what you saw from him in the early days.
You know, Mind Control was sort of a confluence of different factors that led me to get involved in that deal. I had a two-year-old that I had bought out of a sale that spring that was getting ready at Monmouth Park that we had very high hopes for. Greg Sacco had Mind Control, I know, for many, many years, had been very high on his horse as well. And I kind of secretly thought that my horse would win the race. He'd just been very impressive training. And when we ran that day, Mind Control, you know, beat the horse I ran pretty soundly. So it really caught my attention. And I know Rick Sacco, his brother, who's a racing manager in the Brunetti family for many, many years. And I called Rick and I said, Rick, what's the possibility of us doing something with this colt? And he said, well, I doubt that, you know, Mr. Brunetti would sell this horse 100%, but we are trying to be more business orientated, and, you know, maybe we would sell a piece of the horse. At that time, I had recently done some business with Sal Coombe, a very exciting young owner in the game at that time, still a very exciting owner in the game. And I recommended the horse to him, and, you know, first he sort of took a step back and said, hey, stay thirsty, and then I gave him all my reasons, and he listened to what I had to say, and he told me to go ahead and see if I could put the deal together, and that's how it came together.
Wow, fantastic story. You know, these stories in racing are quite common, where you have people get together like this and deals happen, and but it all comes back to the horse, right? You have to have the horse, and you've been so fortunate to be around so many good ones, Nick.
And I think the more you play the game, the more things you see, the more opportunities you get, the more relationships you have, and hypothetically, it's supposed to get easier, but it doesn't really feel like it's getting easier.
Yeah, no, it's supposed to be. That's the way it's supposed to happen. All right, before I let you go, what's the key to Bella Sofia beating Gamine and everybody else in that Philly Amer sprint later today? And don't tell me run faster than her, because that's going to take some work.
I was going to be sarcastic saying being good enough. But I really think that the trip is going to play a really important part. I think the setup is super important. I think Gamine and Bella Sophie are both extremely versatile fillies, so I think it's going to be a little bit of a rider's race. And I think that Louis Saez is one of the great talents in this business. So I think we're going to put our trust in our hands in Louis and see if he can figure out how to make it work.
Well, win or lose, you're going to head back to Thoroughstock in Morriston, Florida, and you'll continue your great work down there. You'll team up with Sallusto and Abena Sales Company, and you'll continue your bloodstock work. And I know you'll be at all the major sales coming up in November. So it's going to be a very busy time for you. But, Nick, keep up the wonderful work, and really all the best with Bella Sophia later today.
Mike, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it, and the well wishes, and I hope to be talking to you post-race with some positive news.
All right. Good luck, my friend. Nick Sallusto here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and we'll see indeed if Bella Sophia can pull it off. It is a tall order having to square off with Gamine, who is the 3-5 morning line favorite. We did have the one scratch in the race. It was the smallest of the Breeders' Cup fields originally, just 6. Now down to a field of 5 with Estilo Talentoso coming out earlier this week. So 5 horses set to go, but those are the top 2, Gamine and Bella Sophia. They should make for one heck of a stretch battle if they turn for home together. And again, that interview presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Whether you are a jockey or an owner or a trainer or even a horse player, there is always an opportunity to refresh and reset with every loss, and certainly a reason to rejoice with every win. Whatever your day brings at the track or in life, reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. You can find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. All right, when I come back, I will, well, first, your Legends of the Turf, your Lexus Legends of the Turf on this Saturday morning. And then when I come back, I'll get you ready for some of the racing action coming up later today. And guess what? It's going to be about the Breeders' Cup. Today's First Bet presented by First Bet. And then I'm going to welcome in Dustin Fabian, who is with First Bet, and he will handicap the races for today. He will take a look back at what happened on the racetrack yesterday at Del Mar. That is all ahead right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the great folks at Lexus of Lexington.
This lady had a wealth of character, a marvelous, vibrant personality, and she was indeed an inspiration to others. She was a lady through and through. And in the roaring 1920s, while still in her 20s, she entered the world of racing as the owner of a steeplechaser. A racing stable, Brookmead, came into existence a few years later. She was adverse to pomposity and took great delight in needling and openly deflating an obvious inflated ego. Her infectious sense of humor provided her the tool for doing so, especially evident in times of stress. Perhaps equally as synonymous with Brookmead Stable and its success were the names of Preston and Elliot Birch, who trained her horses. Preston began training for Our Lady of the Moment in 1944, and on October 21st of that year, he saddled her Dear Me for her in the Maryland Handicap at Laurel. Dear Me whipped the redoubtable Twilight Tear by 7 lengths in that affair, and that was Birch's first of a long, long list of stakes winners he saddled for Brookmead. Birch was very patient with young horses, and he and our subject probably received more thrills from a horse named Sailor than any other racing in her colors. That was in the decade of the 50s, while others racing in her colors included Sword Dancer, Bowl of Flowers, and Oligarchy. Her superb Flower Bowl won the Delaware Handicap in 1956, and on May 2, 1959, Sword Dancer won the Derby for her, while on the very same day, Big Effort won the Bed of Roses at the old Jamaica racetrack on Long Island. In 1934, Our Lady of the Day, as it were, became the very first woman in American turf history to lead the winning owners list. Her Bowl of Flowers was voted Philly Champion of 1960 and 61, and Sword Dancer was voted Horse of the Year in 1959. This marvelous lady dearly loved the thoroughbreds, and among the many greats carrying her silks to the winner's circle, she considered her best to have been Cavalcade, Sailor, Sword Dancer, and Bowl of Flowers. But she had a very soft spot for others, including Okapi, Sunglow, and High Quest. In 1934, and 16 years later in 1950, Brookmead was the leading money-winning stable in America. From 1925 until her demise in 1962, her horses won 1,144 races. As previously indicated, her trademark was her love for and the ability to jest with her trainers, the Birches. Before big races, she would often break the tension in the paddock by saying, for example, quote, "Do you think I should put on the blinkers today?" or, quote, "Now you haven't put that saddle on right," when her jockey would appear, she could be heard to say, quote, "Now, Preston, you step back. I'm going to give the order on how to ride this horse today," with a twinkle in her eye, of course. And she would go on very solemnly to say, quote, "You just go on out and win this race today." If it was muddy, she would be quite apt to say, "Now, don't you dare get my colors dirty today." Yes, this grand lady, and that she was, in every sense of the word through and through, held to the sporting ideals with the best characterized racing to its very best, both in victory and defeat. The mistress of Brookmead Stable and the subject of this piece, Isabel Dodge Sloan.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs October 31st through November 28th with the same strong purses we've had all year, and you are not going to want to miss it. Highlighted by the graded stakes such as the Grade 3 Chalukee, the Grade 2 Falls City, Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club, and the Grade 2 Goldenrod, along with the Grade 1 Clark, this November meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com. That's ChurchillDowns.com.
Nick Sallusto is your source for proven Grade 1 success at every level. Nick's full-service equine management company includes Thorough Stock Training Center in Morriston, Florida, launching the career of Grade 1 winner Bella Sophia, and Sallusto and Albina Bloodstock, specializing in sales representation, breeding, and private purchases, including Kentucky Derby winner Big Brown, Champion Caledonia Road, Grade 1 winners Mind Control, Arclo, Beach Patrol, and Violence, along with undefeated Greatest Stakes winner Cantharos. For more information, visit ThoroughStock.com. That's ThoroStock.com.
Hi, this is jockey Umberto Rispoli, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Pinehurst is in between horses. Papa Cap is down at the rail. Giant Game is sent up four wide, midway on the far turn. After that, it's Double Thunder and Barossa. Corniche coming to the top of the stretch with the lead in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And Giant Game is closing on the outside. Now moving up right alongside of Corniche as they come to the final furlong. Corniche with something left. Giant Game off the rail. Papa Cap trying to split those two, but it's Corniche. He's just too good. Corniche wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then it was Papa Cap in second. Giant Game was third. Command Performance fourth.
Well, Corniche was really, really good in winning that Breeders' Cup Juvenile yesterday at Del Mar. Welcome back, Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Corniche, now the winter book favorite for the Kentucky Derby. He is plus 600, according to Caesar Sportsbook by William Hill. Jack Christopher, the horse that was the morning line favorite in the Juvenile yesterday, had to be scratched for trainer Chad Brown. Second choice, plus 2,000. Papa Cap, the runner-up in the Juvenile, plus 2,500. And then you come back to Command Performance and Rattle and Roll and Winning Map. But Corniche, as expected, the winter book favorite, and he has been brilliant in his very short career. All right, up next, it is time to get you to today's first bet, your opportunity to bet the races. And then I'm going to be joined by Dustin Fabian, who is with First Bet and Express Bet. He will take a look at the races today. He'll look back on the occurrences of yesterday at Del Mar. That's next, but first, today's First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in race 12 at Del Mar. That's the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic. 5:40 Pacific time is the post. That's 8:40 Eastern. Number 4, Essential Quality, is 3-1 on the morning line, has a 33% win projection from First Bet. That is the highest win projection of any race on Breeders' Cup Saturday by the algorithm. Rates 16 points higher than the next closest rival, that's Nick's Go, ranks number 1 in 5 of the top 9 First Bet handicapping factors for the Classic. The Belmont Jim Dandy and Travers winner aims for his 4th straight win, and last year's Juvenile winner can become the first horse to add the Classic later in his career. Number 4, Essential Quality, in the Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar, is today's First Bet. And I'm back in 60 seconds to visit with First Bet's Dustin Fabian right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, today's poll question, you can weigh in at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you don't do social media, that's cool. Email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Who is your best bet on Breeders' Cup Saturday? 9 races coming up later today. Who is your best bet? Maybe it's Gamine. Maybe it's Tarnawa, a couple of the defending champions. Maybe it's Essential Quality. You just heard. He was today's first bet, according to our friends at First Bet and Express Bet, and joined now by Dustin Fabian, who is indeed with that organization. Dustin, good morning, my friend.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you. How's it going?
Everything is good. I have to say, after the occurrences that took place at the end of the day yesterday in the final race on Breeders' Cup Friday, the juvenile turf, it's almost hard to move forward and get fired up for the 9 races today because there's so much controversy involving what happened yesterday afternoon.
It's wow. Yeah, no, I can tell you that was probably, recently we've had a Kentucky Derby DQ, and this was 10 times more shocking than that. And like you said, I think there are a lot of people waking up, Breeders' Cup Saturday morning, and frankly, they're deciding if they want to play today. And I think people feel, cheated. They feel ripped off. It's all confusing. And it's a lot to unpack. And, yeah, I mean, we're obviously, very excited for Saturday's races. There's phenomenal equine athletes and human athletes ready to throw down their best performances. But it's certainly not the step that the industry probably wanted to be walking into Saturday's races on.
Yeah, very well said. And I pride myself, and I pride our network, on being promoters of the sport of thoroughbred racing, because there are so many more good things with thoroughbred racing than there are bad things. And the bad things always seem to make the headlines. And it's like that with everything in life. Everybody likes to, turn and look at the car wreck when they go by, right? But this incident here is so discouraging because it happens again on one of racing's biggest stages, and we preach about integrity and transparency. And once again, when we had an opportunity as an industry to do the right thing, we didn't. And unfortunately, the folks that end up really taking it on the chin here are the bettors, the betting public, and so often that's the case.
So absolutely. And, you know, at ExpressBet and at FirstBet, you know, we pride ourselves on being the player's ADW.
Yep.
And, you know, online betting platform that puts the players first. And, you know, you gave the car wreck analogy, and that's truly how it unfortunately felt for myself and a lot of my colleagues yesterday, just kind of, you know, watching everything unfold. And we have no, you know, we're watching along with everybody else. We're getting the same notifications from our tote providers and from the simulcast and everything that everybody else is. And we're just watching this, and it's just, it kind of just felt like it keeps getting a little more discouraging and a little more, you know,
inexcusable. Yeah,
exactly. And issues happen, miscommunications happen. I'm not going to put anybody on blast because, you know, at the end of the day, it sounds like from the statements made by the CHRB specifically that there was a miscommunication, and the unfortunate part is there are roles in place to help the bettors, and there are roles in place to help the owners, and there are roles in place to ensure that, you know, because if you're Godolphin and you're Charlie Appleby, you know, first of all, you know, I should say, you know, very thankful to hear that Al Bahar, Frankie Dettori, it sounds like no injuries.
Right.
Just because that's such a scary incident to happen, you know, two-year-olds up on his, you know, over the front of the gate, and you're just, it's gut-wrenching to see that. You know, on one hand, you're glad that they don't punish the owner and trainer for a miscommunication. And then on the other hand, you know, as the people taking the bets, we might have been saying a few Hail Marys that maybe hidden, you know, maybe the one horse in there doesn't run a winning race, because I mean, it impacted me. It impacted us both as a business, and it impacted me as a bettor. I went from having two horses in a multi-race sequence to no horses,
yeah,
to having a horse I didn't want in a multi. And it's just, you know, I would say that, you know, for me personally, and, you know, I would really hope that this, you know, the Breeders' Cup and the CHRB both came out late last night with statements that said, we need to look at these rules because what was written in the 1970s may not be the right rule for 2020. So
yeah.
Hopefully something good comes from that, but
right. Yeah. And the Breeders' Cup statement, in my opinion, was a no look pass in basketball. It was very weak. It was pushing it over to the CHRB, which, look, it's on the CHRB. This really falls on them. And the miscommunication was between the veterinarians and the stewards. And it's really disgraceful that it turned out the way it did. And once again, we preach transparency. We preach integrity. But those are just words unless we actually, as an industry, practice what we preach. And that, unfortunately, didn't happen yesterday. Talking with Dustin Fabian from First Bet and Express Bet, and as he pointed out, the good news is that Al Bahar is healthy and fine, that Modern Games is healthy and fine. And Modern Games ran one hell of a race. I mean, that, you know, in the end, take nothing away from the horse. The horse showed up. It's not his fault he ran for purse money only. That horse showed up and ran a monster race. He was much the best.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, looking at Friday, and it was kind of funny. I was texting back and forth with you, and we were like, hey, we'll recap some of Friday's races. And through four races, that was kind of like, I don't know that there's going to be a lot to really recap here. And then all of a sudden, Juvenile Turf came, and there's plenty to talk about. But absolutely, he ran a phenomenal race. You know, kind of the race that, you know, people expected that he would run. And, you know, I tip my cap to all five winners on Friday. I thought almost everybody who you expected to show up and run a big race did show up and run a big race. So that was really, I thought that there was a lot of encouraging up until that last race on Friday. And it was a very, you know, kind of formful, but that's okay when the horses that you want that are supposed to run well do run well.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people now that have a very bad taste in their mouth about Breeders' Cup and about the sport of thoroughbred racing, and it's completely understandable. That what happened yesterday was embarrassing. But let's turn our attention, Dustin, to today, because I want to make sure that we do have enough time to talk about some of these races today. And I sent out the poll question, as you just heard me mention, who is your best bet on Breeders' Cup Saturday? So who are some of the horses and the races in particular that you're going to have an eye on today where maybe folks can make a little bit of money?
Sure. No, absolutely. To answer your question, I think it's hard to say Jackie's Warrior isn't my best bet lock cinch of the day. That horse just continues to impress me. You know, he's going to be a short price. But in the sprint, I think he's spectacular. And, you know, with the Del Mar track, we know that on the dirt, you probably want to be on or near the lead. You're not going to probably make up 15 lengths from the quarter pole home. So he's my best bet of the day. You know, hands down. Another horse, or, you know, two other horses that I really have my eye on. I'll give you one kind of more logical horse and then kind of a crazy one. So we'll go with the more logical one first. I think Malathot in the Distaff is just sitting on a huge performance. Todd Pletcher, Hall of Fame trainer, he's obviously been here before. He knows how to win big races. And I think with this filly, he pretty much came out of the Kentucky Oaks. And by the way, the Kentucky Oaks was probably a race that, in hindsight, she really had no business winning. She came into it off one prep race at Keeneland, what, 3 or 4 weeks prior. She goes to the Kentucky Oaks. She gets just into a stretch brawl with Search Results, who's a, you know, Chad Brown filly, very talented in her own right. And she withstands that. She gets up on the wire. And then I think, you know, Derby day, when all of us are looking at the Kentucky Derby, Todd Pletcher's mapping out, okay, how are we going to get to the Breeders' Cup? So he sends her up to Saratoga, runs her twice up there. Two, you know, really solid performances, and I think it's all systems go. Everything's set on peaking today for Malathot. Just think that, you know, ultimately somebody's going to have to go with Latruska to make that possible. There's about four other pace setters in the race. Let's see how everyone plays their cards whenever the horses break out of the gate. But from there, I think if Malathot can get a trip from right in behind the pace setter, she's going to have a very live shot. I think 4-1 on the morning line might be a little ambitious for her. We might be more looking at a 3-1, 7-2. But that's really going to just depend on how much money comes in on Latruska, how much money comes in on some of the other runners in there. There's, you know, Chad Brown's got a few, Baffert has a few. So a lot of unique opportunities for horses that, you know, might get 3-1 on Malathot, which is, you know, a really solid price on a really good filly. And the other horse I like, you might laugh here, but in the turf sprint, I really like Caravelle. She's sitting here at 20-1 on the morning line. She's coming in off just two mediocre performances, you know, third at Woodbine and I think sixth at Parks. You know, but what has me encouraged is if she was going south, I don't think Graham Motion would have put her on a plane and shipped her to California. Just doesn't seem like the play for a horse that's, you know, I don't want to say accomplished a lot, but she's very well bred. She's, you know, got incredible value as a broodmare. If they wanted to just hang up her tack right now and say, you know, let's take you off to the shed. So the fact that they're out here taking this shot says a lot to me, as does the fact that we know what we're getting with the California turf course. And it's going to be fast. It's going to be quick. It's going to not be, you know, she ran into a really kind of weird boggy course at Parks in Philadelphia last out. She didn't really seem to care for that. at Woodbine. We know the Woodbine turf course has that long stretch. She was going 6 furlongs that day. She cuts back in distance here. I just think there's a lot pointing to her as a horse that can sit probably just behind the speed, and there's going to be plenty of speed in that race. So, you know, and we saw yesterday that the turf course was very fair. Horses won from dead last in Pizza Bianca's case, or horses won from the lead in Twilight Gleaming. So I think that there's plenty of opportunity for her to sit a great trip and hopefully, you know, be in with a puncher's chance at the 16th pole. That's all you can really ask for. That race is going to be a blanket finish, but hopefully she's the one that gets her nose down first.
Yeah, it's you know, look, that's a great value play, and we'll see if indeed she can come through in that particular race. Dustin, I have literally about 30 seconds left before I have to get to the break. Tell me what folks can expect today at First Bet and Express Bet.
Absolutely, appreciate it. So, you know, we've mentioned the sign-up bonus. It's in your commercial. Come to the site if you haven't signed up yet. Get a $10 free bet plus a big 10% rebate for your first 30 days. We've got our free wager guide that has our human and AI picks from everybody from Jeff Siegel to Johnny D and Michelle Yu. And then we've got a money-back special on every race today at Del Mar. If your horse finishes second or third and is not declared a for purse money only horse, you get your cash back up to $10 each and every race. So really excited for people to come to the site, open for business, and hope that horse players come out and enjoy day two of the Breeders' Cup.
There you have it, Dustin Fabian, First Bet, Express Bet, your home for the Breeders' Cup there. Dustin, appreciate it, my friend. Thanks for taking a little time, and all the best later today. Good luck.
You as well. Thank you, Mike.
All right, going to get to another break. I'll come back, get you set for a busy second hour of the program. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Right now, we all might feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone with smaller social circles, feelings of loneliness and isolation can feel overwhelming. But there's something we can all do to help. Connect with your older loved one virtually and have the conversation of a lifetime with StoryCorps Connect. Anyone can conduct an interview, and every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history. Connect, honor, share at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
This is jockey Julian Lopau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Four of them come into the final furlong. Mandalone fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie on the outside. Essential Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Beffrick does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby.
Nixco opens up a little bit more. Now it's three. Independence Hall trying to close in toward the inside. Then it's Tacitus and Shared Sense. But Joel Rosario is merely along for the ride. It is Nix. All systems go to the Breeders' Cup. Geared down, an effortless winner of the Lucas Classic.
Larry Colmus, Travis Stone with the call of Medina Spirit and Nixco, respectively. They'll meet today in the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar. You're going to hear from each of their jockeys coming up in the next segment in just a few minutes. Our Road to the Breeders' Cup segment includes interviews with John Velasquez and Joel Rosario. Each of those individuals took time to join Bobby Newman and Jude Feld on our Breeders' Cup Countdown shows this week that we hosted trackside at Del Mar. You'll hear their thoughts on those horses and more coming up on Breeders' Cup Saturday. Want to remind you that if you haven't already done so, you'll want to check out the new Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. If you enjoy being outside, if you are getting ready for the rifle season for whitetail deer here in Kentucky next year, this is the place to be. The store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and the Elite Outdoor Superstore really does have everything that you need from hunting deer and turkey, ducks, whatever it might be. They even have two indoor archery ranges, so if you are looking to purchase a new bow, you can go ahead and test them out down there at Whitetail Heaven Outfitters. Just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. I'm back to take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, welcome back. So many of you focused on what happened yesterday at the end of the day. Rightfully so. I'll have more on that coming up later in the program. With you until 11 o'clock Eastern, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, on this Breeders' Cup Saturday morning. Our coverage this afternoon, by the way, make sure you join us, 6 hours of exclusive radio coverage with our award-winning team, 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock Eastern. That's noon to 6 Pacific. You can tune in Sirius 219, XM 201. You can listen on affiliates across the country, and you can stream us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Make sure you're tuned into that coverage as we bring you our exclusive radio coverage of Breeders' Cup Saturday. Well, don't forget that Horse Racing's World Championships are indeed here, and now you can bet the Breeders' Cup risk-free with TVG. That's right. New TVG players can get started with a risk-free bet up to $300. That means you'll get up to $300 back if your horse doesn't win. How cool is that? The TVG app is so easy to use and gives you all the tools that you need. You'll get access to free picks, analysis, and wagering advice from industry experts. The Breeders' Cup takes place, of course, later today, and now is the perfect time to give TVG a shot. Just sign up with promo code HRRN for your chance to bet risk-free up to $300. That's promo code HRRN to place your first win bet risk-free exclusively on TVG.com/HRRN and the TVG app. Don't forget the age and residency and other eligibility restrictions apply. New users only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires after 30 days. And you can see terms at TVG.com. If you have a gambling problem, just call 1-800-522-4700. Well, time now to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. That will be followed by my visit with Fasig Tipton President Boyd Browning, looking ahead to their November sale, which begins on Tuesday. Our industry star of the week, my conversation with trainer Ed Mosier Jr., who will saddle Longshot Stiletto Boy in today's Breeders' Cup Classic. And then, of course, In the Room with Sean Clancy kicks off Hour 3, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, and I Ask, They Answer, a special Breeders' Cup edition with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin at 10:30 Eastern. All of that is still ahead. But right now we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, and as I mentioned, John Velasquez took time to stop by and visit with Bobby Newman and Jude Feld this week on our Breeders' Cup Countdown show. And here's what Johnny had to say about riding Medina Spirit in the Classic.
He'll be close to the lead, but I'm not taking a hold of him because then I'll take what his power is. Though, you know, so if somebody needs to go faster, they need to go faster than him, but he's still in the same rhythm that he normally is. And he has proven that when he's in a good rhythm, he can go, you know, the distance and fight on. So, and that's the thing with him. I think the key that we learned from him, the first time I rode him, you know, kind of came out of the gate and tried to hold him, tried to rate him, and it didn't work for us. Although, you know, the two horses that beat him, obviously, Life is Good, I think it was. He went on running really fast, kept running. The other horse came from the grass from 7/8, whatever it was, and ran the race of his life, though, you know, first time on the dirt. But again, you know, so after that race, I told Babs, I mean, this horse is better than you think, though. You know, I keep telling him this horse is a much better horse, so I think we're going to have to ride him differently, though, you know, where he's free running, put him into his own stride that he's going to fight, though, you know, every time the horses come to him, he fights. So I told him, man, this horse has a big heart, though, you know. And then Delby came in, and I said to him, it's like, we need to meet Jeff Ruby, because the year before, we won with Authentic, and that's where we met, and we planned, and we did all this thing to, you know, with Authentic. So we got to do the same thing. It's like, ah, oh, Johnny, you know what? Just do what you need to do. Don't worry about it. Though, you know, I think he's an okay horse. No, Bob, I need your blessing.
So basically what you're saying is Bob didn't want to have dinner with you that night.
Like, I need your blessing. If I do something that you don't like, I don't want to be fired. So I wanted the blessing that you're going to let me do the things. And then we talked about it. You know, the same horse that was here. And I forgot the name of the horse, but believe me, guys. So it's like there was here. So that's the only horse that might be, I'll break me. I will be in front of me. But I think I'm going to make him go fast. He said, you know what, Johnny, that horse doesn't break really good. So go and do your thing. I said, so I'm okay to come out running and go to the first, you know, to the wire. I come and run and get him to a good position on the lead. And if he breaks, he wants to go faster, then I let him go. But I'm not taking hold of my horse. Like, Johnny, don't worry about it. Ride your race. Don't worry. It's like, okay. So end up, you know, broke well, got to, you know, to the lead pretty easy. Got to where he was comfortable and going fast enough, but easy enough that he was on a comfortable pace. And that's the way I'm trying to think. This race, though, you know, I'm going to come out running. You know, I'm going to pass the wire for the first time, where he's comfortable, where he gets his free running. And once he gets into that point, I leave him alone. And if the other horse passes him, so be it. So I think he's a fighter anyway. So he's not a horse that needs to be on the lead. He just happened to be a free running. So that's my plan with him. Then again, I have to talk to Bob. Have his blessing. The same thing, you know, that we're going to let him do what he's comfortable, you know, what his power is, you know, what his momentum and rhythm is. So, and hopefully we can do that.
It was interesting this morning watching him train at the same time that Hot Rod Charlie was training, because Hot Rod Charlie is big, powerful. He almost looks like a Clydesdale coming down the street. And Medina Spirit was, like, very gentle and relaxed, and he was just like kind of hobby.
Yeah, not that big.
Yeah, you know? He's kind of like, hobby, yeah, horsing around there, just like really happy, you know. And then here comes Hot Rod Charlie, like boom, 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 you know, like a track.
Aggressive,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah, like, two really good horses, yes. maybe the best in the race, and you know, just like totally different style.
Absolutely, yeah, and two good horses. I mean, Hot Rod Charlie, he seems like he's speaking now too at the right time. He's gotten better every race, so yeah, he's definitely a horse to beat, though, you know. So
the 3-year-olds seem like they've caught up to the older horses. They didn't, when they were really prepping for the Derby and the Triple Crown races, they didn't look like they were nearly as fast as a horse like Nick's Go if he ran his good race. But Essential Quality and Medina, yeah, Spirit and Hot, exactly, Rod Charlie have taken gigantic steps forward, and they're all looking like they're hitting the Breeders' Cup at the right time. One of the fillies you ride.
And I just want to say, you know, so I don't know why, I mean, how good all these 3-year-olds are, right? And Medina Spirit beat them on Kentucky Derby, though. I don't know why is it that people have not caught up with him and not believe in the horse. He had to come back and win a great one with the older horses, and maybe gets people to believe on the horse, you know. So I always believe on him, so you know, it's nothing but.
Well, there's a lot of outside things going on that people.
You have been so effusive in your praise for him. I mean, after you get off him, and you know the press interviews you and all, you've always been a fan of Medina Spirit.
I was a fan. I didn't win on him yet, and I was telling Bob, I love this horse. This horse is a little hard, and this horse is going to be much better, though, you know. So I believed in him. So that's why, you know, when you believe in a horse and it gives you, and then obviously it goes to the Derby, wins, comes back and finished third, you know, after the Derby. I thought he'd run a great race, but the Derby was a really hard race on him. The two horses, one was a fresh horse. The other horse was second, run a horrible race in the Derby. So he didn't run hard at all, though, you know. So I said, you know, sometimes those horses run really hard. It's really hard to just come back in 2 weeks and repeat the races, though, right. You know. But I still believe in it and come back again after a little layoff, come back and win. So believe it in a horse and giving you what he's done after that. I mean, and look at what Hard Rod Child has done and the other horse, Godolphin, has done. You know, it was a really hard Derby, and look at where they are now in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
It's really a testament to their trainers and the whole crew at keeping them not only keeping them at their peak, continuing the progression throughout the rest of the year. And speaking with jockey John Velasquez, who's going to ride Medina Spirit in the Classic, you ride another fighter in Malathat in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. She's another one who looks like likes to get into a tussle. Doesn't have the same kind of natural speed that Medina Spirit does, but she's got grit. A mare that you ride that doesn't seem to ever have, or a filly you ride that she hasn't found a fight in a long time, is Gamine. She's just the king. You know, she's the monster on the block, and they're all the, you know, the little underlings, it seems like, in a lot of her races. She's winning by 2, by 10, by 2, by 5, by 6. And now you're going to be in a field of 5 now. Is it any different riding a filly like this who, let's face it, the entire world expects her to win?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the only thing is 5 horses, and it's 2 really speed horses. You know what? We have the horse for Rui Rodriguez outside of us, and she's speed. He says that he's going to test our speed, you know. So let's see how fast can we go and where we finish. So I said to him, well, you know what? A lot of people have tried that, and they have finished nowhere. So, so they had tried that.
So you like that plan for him?
I was like, yeah. So look what you have to do, and hopefully we don't kill each other for somebody else. But, you know, a lot of people have done that, though. You know, they had tested it where they're going 21 and 44, they go 23 and 47. And every distance that she's run, whether she goes fast or she goes slow, no, she shows up, though. You know what I mean? So if they let her go slow, she goes slow. She goes, you press her to go fast, she's going to go fast, you know, and that's the way she does things. And again, that's a horse that I'm not going to take away what she does easy. So if he needs to go faster, he needs to go faster than my horse, though.
Right.
So that's the way I play with her. So it's not a horse I'm going to be grabbing it to try to get it back, because it's not her power. So her power is a come to speed that she goes fast. Yeah.
Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
John Velasquez, looking at a couple of his major contenders, including Medina Spirit in today's Breeders' Cup Classic. Joel Rosario also stopped by, and he's a busy guy. I think he rode or is riding every single Breeders' Cup race, or pretty much every one, and that's what you would expect from a guy that's at the top of the game right now, and he took time to visit with Bobby and with Jude.
Is this something where you want to be in as many races as possible, or it doesn't seem like you get tired out there?
Yes, I think you want to, you know, be in more races you want to, you know, especially like, you know, Friday and Saturday for sure.
How long does it last, the high of riding these big races? I mean, you finish one, you got to go clean up, get the silks for the next race, go out there. Do you ever get to a part of the day where you feel like, oh man, I have to go out again, or do you just stay up the whole time?
No, actually, you know, it's fun. I mean, it's fun, and you know, I like the riding, and especially, you know, when it's a I think every race they are important, but when it's a big race, you know, and then you have so many people, you know, rooting and stuff like that, it's an amazing feeling. You never get tired.
Do you feel the pressure of the fans counting on you so much? Because you're a guy that, like, people come out to the track, oh, I'm betting Rosario today. That's all I'm going to bet is Rosario. you hear people say that, right? And I understand it, because, you know, you're kind of like El Mago. You can do things on horses other people can't do. I mean, do you ever feel that pressure? Like, you have to perform a certain way or do a certain thing?
Not really. I mean, sometimes it's pressure, but not, you know, I just
I just go up there and ride, you know, the horse, the trying to get the best of, you know, and the race, and then and trying to always figure out what the horse wanted to do.
Do you do a lot of homework beforehand? Do you kind of like?
I do. I look the who was the speed in the race, who was the jockey who ride him, and you know, after I come out of the gate, just depending on the horse, you know, how he come out of there and see what he wanted to do and stuff like that. So just it's a lot of thing that, you know, you have to kind of, is going through your head, you know, at the same time you kind of have to just put it together.
Yeah, so you're not just a pretty face that rides horses. You actually have to think about it sometimes.
Well, for sure.
He's also riding several horses that he's never ridden before,
right,
in the Breeders' Cup. So in addition to what you were saying, looking at it, how much planning do you do with the trainers or, you know, ahead of time to decide on, you know, how you want to ride the horse?
Yeah, actually, it's another thing, you know, you have to just listen to the trainer, what he have to say and stuff like that. And, it's a lot of little things.
You watch films like football players?
I do watch the film to see, you know, if the horse, you know, how it come out of the gate and stuff like that. Or a lot of homework.
Yeah.
Well, certainly one of the biggest horses, or maybe the biggest horse that he'll be riding this weekend, is Nix Go in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Classic, $6 million purse. Nix Go, boy, he was a monster at the end of last year and the early part of this year. And then he kind of stumbled a little bit, as it were, both in the Met Mile and in the Saudi Cup. He was pressed heavily by Charlatan in the Saudi Cup, and he didn't kick on as he normally does. He did not run his normal big race in the Met Mile, both one-turn races. Then he got back to going around two turns in Iowa and in New York and at Churchill Downs, and he was beating fields easily. What's different about Nix Go going two turns than one turn?
I mean, he looked like he just loved, you know, he's a great, I mean, he's tried really hard, this horse, all the time. He's an amazing horse. He had much speed that he have, and he able to just keep going with that speed. And, it seemed like when he get into the turn, he just loved to run, going to the turn, and then he seemed like pretty happy with that.
He's a horse that has a lot of speed, and he looks like he really wants to be in front. Now, the funny thing is, I'm not sure how many people know this, Joel and John Velasquez share the same agent. And John Velasquez rides Medina Spirit. We really want to know who's going to make the lead and how fast are you going to have to go in the Breeders' Cup Classic, because both of these horses are very, very fast.
They are. They're both very fast, and just, you know, up to when we break out of there, and then we'll see, you know, who is the faster, and see what is, how the race is playing into.
You have to make that decision so quick, right?
Yes.
Whether to go or to sit.
Yep.
I mean, is your usual inclination to go, or is it to sit?
I mean, it just depends. Uh-huh. Sometimes depends on the horse too. Sometimes you ask the horse to go, and he just go, and then you might never get him back, and he just be able to. I mean, he always gonna be in the rider for you. So, just all depends on the horse. Depends living out of there, and.
Can you tell in the warm up if a horse is like gonna give it to you that day, or
yeah, you can tell a little bit in the warming up, but you. It helps you a little bit when you know the horse a little bit, or when you come out of there and then just start running, because sometimes they act like that, but they actually, when you go there, they're not, you know, show you that speed that they probably were before you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a feeling in the moment.
Two of the greatest in the game today, John Velasquez, Joel Rosario. My thanks to them for stopping by the set earlier this week. When I come back, I will visit with Fasig Tipton President Boyd Browning. We'll look ahead to Tuesday's Night of Star Sale. It's going to be spectacular. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup, with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf, for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when the blood vessels in the lung rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressures on the inside of the vessel and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have ever been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal vessel pressure, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside of the vessel. See the science at flarestrips.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Essential quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keith Meehan behind Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Essential quality, too good. Essential quality has won the
Champion Essential Quality displayed precociousness with that win in last year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile and continued to showcase his brilliance in 2021 with that classic victory in the Test of the Champion. The future Darley Stallion is the only horse to have the speed and precocity to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the stamina and durability to win the Belmont Stakes. And that makes Essential Quality your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Learn more about all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Swiss Skydiver set to strike in behind. She's third and set to go as well as they come to the top of the stretch. And Gamine turns for home in front. She dares the Devils bearing down. And Swiss Skydiver is coming down the center of the course as well. There's one furlong to go. Gamine's desperately trying to hold. She dares the Devil, strikes the front of the eighth pole. Swiss Skydiver's trying hard, but she's still second. Not today for Gamine. It is She Dares the Devil turning back Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, and all the rest. She Dares the Devil scores in the Oaks. Swiss Skydiver was second, Gamine was third, and Speech was fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment. That call you just heard from Travis Stone, She Dares the Devil, winning last year's Kentucky Oaks. She is, of course, competing in the Breeders' Cup this year, but she is one of several stars set to go under the gavel at the Fasig Tipton November sale, which is actually billed as a night of stars. So it's appropriate that we would see She Dares the Devil in the auction ring. Going to tell you all about the other contenders you'll look for next Tuesday in Lexington, Kentucky, when that November sale kicks off at 2 o'clock Eastern. This interview, by the way, brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water, and I have the privilege of welcoming in Boyd Browning, who is the president of Fasig Tipton. And Boyd, you hear that call, and you listen to She Dares the Devil win the Oaks last year, and now you get to see her next week in Lexington in the auction ring. That has to be pretty special.
It's fantastic, and the only thing that could have made it any better, Mike, was if we could have had a dead heat with She Dares the Devil and Swiss Skydiver, because they're both in the sale next week, and
yeah,
they both have had tremendous accomplishments to date, and, you know, obviously there's a very important race looming for She Dares the Devil, but it's a, you know, it's a real honor to have the opportunity to sell fillies of this caliber, and we're just so appreciative of the folks who entrust us to sell the very, very best, like She Dares the Devil and Swiss Skydiver and a really large group of other high-quality fillies and mares, as well as mares and foal next week. It's a great honor and a privilege, and we couldn't be any more excited about the upcoming auction.
There were 11 champions and Breeders' Cup winners and Classic winners, by the way, entered into that sale on Tuesday. 32 Grade 1 winners or producers, 53 graded stakes winners or producers, and then 140 selected weanlings. So, Boyd, when you talk about the cream of the crop, and we often do this when we talk about the Saratoga yearling sale, you're looking at a lot of star power coming up next week.
You know, it's an exceptional catalog. I've had a number of people tell me that they thought that it might be the deepest catalog in terms of the overall quality that we've ever had. It's, you know, it's really impossible to evaluate and judge one catalog to the others. And frankly, once you get done selling a particular year, like we'll you know, do everything we can to have a great night Tuesday night, and hopefully we'll have a lot of success for a lot of people. But you know, come Wednesday morning, we turn the page and it's focused on 2022. So you really don't, you know, it's hard. As I said, it's hard to compare from year to year, but but certainly the quality throughout on the mares and the foals is I think without question the best that we've ever had. Now that means that we may not have a $10 million horse or a $14 million horse, but who knows? We might. You just don't ever know what's going to happen with some of these horses. But horse for horse, it's an exceptional catalog.
I'm glad you bring that up. But the fact that after this sale is done, you'll turn the page, start looking ahead to 2022, and I do want to talk more about some of the Breeders' Cup ties to this November sale. But you've had to do that now, coming out of a strong October sale just a couple of weeks ago. You wrapped that one up, and now you turn your attention right to the November sale, and even beyond. I mean, that's the nature of the business, isn't it, Boyd? You have to just kind of move on right after the other one finishes. But boy, that October sale was fantastic.
The October sale was truly fantastic. There's no better description than fantastic. I mean, to think that the gross went from $32 million in 2020 to $52 million in 2021, and not only did a $20 million increase, but I mean, it's like almost 60% increase in gross. So, you know, momentum is a great friend or foe, and right now there's a lot of positive momentum really throughout the industry, and there, people feel good about the industry. There's obviously a great deal of excitement with the Breeders' Cup races, and I think it's an opportunity that basically pulls the industry together, and everyone looks forward to having the best horses around the world to compete and show their skills. And there's a lot of momentum in the marketplace right now, too. There's, purses are good. The overall worldwide economy is good. People, I think, are just happy to be back engaged and doing some of the things that they love to do. Like thoroughbred racing and sales.
Last weekend on the program, I talked to trainer Ken McPeak, and we talked about the purse structure here in Kentucky and how strong it is. You look at Churchill Downs and the running maiden races for, what, $120,000, $130,000. That's a stakes purse, Boyd. And you mentioned the fact that purses are strong all over the country. How important is that when you're an auction company and you're bringing future stars into the ring? How important is it for you guys to make sure that the other side of the business is taking care of their end?
Oh, it's vital. I mean, the reality is that all segments of the market are interrelated. And I think that's sometimes that people forget about is, I might live in the quote-unquote sales world and think primarily about that, but the racing world is we're directly tied to the health and the success of that, as is the breeding world. And we all must work together, and at the end of the day, we got to make our industry as strong as possible, which means, delivering a great product for people to enjoy at the racetrack, for people at the sales ring, for the entire industry. And we got to try to grow that by making, you and I know how much we love the sport. We know the things that are great about the sport, but we've got to continue to grow the sport and introduce the thrills and the opportunities to the people who aren't in it right now. And in order to achieve and maintain the level of success that we all want to.
We've had a couple of conversations throughout the year now, Boyd, and quite often I'll ask you about the state of the yearling market, for example, before we talk about the Saratoga sale. When we were starting to look ahead to 2021, there was a sense of optimism after everything that the industry and the world had to go through in 2020. What's the one thing this year, as you look back on everything that Fasig Tipton has accomplished with these record sales, what's the one thing that's been the most pleasant surprise to you that maybe you didn't really know what to expect going into 2021 or you weren't really sure about a certain thing, but boy, it's turned out to be really good?
Well, I think it's the depth of the marketplace. So often the media and the average person just kind of looks at the sales statistics and says, oh, okay, the market's up, that sale was up 15%, so that's really good. And oftentimes in the past, that might have been influenced by one or two major buyers, and it was really predominantly moved by the top end of the market, which meant that, one or two people might have had an exceptional sale, but it didn't really flow through to everybody. What's been the most encouraging thing in the sales market in 2021, both the two-year-old sales and at the yearling sales, was that it was spread out, and it was a very, very, very broad buyer base. It was not dominated by any group. We see the continued emergence of partnerships at the upper end of the market, but we also see, reinvigoration folks who may not have bought a horse in the last 5 or 10 years re-entering the commercial marketplace and buying horses. That was what was most interesting at the last sale in Kentucky, the October sale, was the number of people who, you know, I was working in the sales office quite a bit and was in there, and, you know, somebody would walk in and I said, damn, I haven't seen you in like 5 years. And yeah, well, I've gotten back in the game. I've decided to start buying some horses again. And I think that's the thing that's really kind of refreshing, is to see that renewed enthusiasm, that renewed interest. And also, you know, in these sales, we've seen, you know, a unprecedented amount of like new folks that we don't know, you know, applying for credit and buying horses, not necessarily at the $500,000 range, but at the $50,000 range and the $75,000 range and the $15,000 range. So that's been the most interesting and the most encouraging sign of 2021 to date.
Talking with Fasig Tipton President Boyd Browning here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He will make the pilgrimage back to Kentucky because he has to be here to welcome his consigners and buyers that will be attending the November sale on Tuesday afternoon. Again, it takes place at the Newtown Pike Pavilion, and that will happen 2 o'clock Eastern time on Tuesday, the Fasig Tipton Night of Stars sale. Boyd, you watch these races, these Breeders' Cup races, and you see the horses that we talked about, like a She Dares the Devil, for example, and horses that are going to be making their way after the Breeders' Cup to be sold at Fasig Tipton. But you also have several runners that, even though they're not going to be sold now, they were sold maybe as a yearling or as a horses of racing age. They've come through your auction ring. How cool is it for you to sit back and just enjoy the Breeders' Cup but have a rooting interest in almost every race?
Well, if people sometimes like watching me at the races and think I'm a complete idiot because I'll be like cheering like mad like for a horse, you know, coming towards the finish line and yes, we won. And somebody in the mansion, oh, do you own that horse? No. Oh, did you breed that horse? No. Well, what is your connection with that horse? Well, we sold it. Well, what does that mean? Do you get more money now? And it's like, no, it's just the sense of accomplishment. It's a sense of pride. It's seeing people that you do business with achieve success, whether it was the breeder or the owner now. It's an invigorating feeling, and it's really hard to describe for people who aren't in the business the thrill of seeing a horse achieve success that, you know, we haven't really influenced that success. We put on hopefully a great auction, and both parties had a great experience, but we still have a connection to that horse, and it's still a horse that, you know, my cheat sheet for the Breeders' Cup is pretty extensive. You know, okay, sales graduate, potential, this year's sales entry, potential sales entry, find the dam of this one, so forth. But it's there's no feeling like it. And it's the world's biggest stage with, you know, the depth of quality races. And hopefully my voice will be hoarse after cheering on some Fasig Tipton sales graduates or future Fasig Tipton sales graduates to some remarkable success on the racetrack.
Off the top of your head, and I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, but off the top of your head, the horses that, not necessarily looking most forward to watching, but the horses with Fasig Tipton ties that you're expecting to make some noise coming up on Saturday afternoon.
Well, I think you'd have to say that She Dares the Devil is the headliner in that regard, because she is going to be sold on Tuesday night and has had such a remarkable career to date. The level of consistency that she's performed with is amazing. So she would be kind of I'd be lying if I didn't say she'd be my quote unquote, if I had one horse to win, I'd have to pick her. But then you say, you know, you go into, you know, let's start with the classic. You know, you've got like Hot Rod Charlie, who's an amazing story, was sold in the February sale as a short yearling, for $17,000, $17,500, and then came back to the October yearling sale and was sold there. And just, you know, a remarkable story. Some, you know, sold in the February sale by our late friend who just passed, Jimmy Herbiner, and bought by, you know, Bob and Sean Feld, who have had their hands on some really quality horses. And, you know, Charlie's got a real, real shot. You know, you got a horse like Medina Spirit, whose dam is in the sale. And, you know, that would obviously be a you know, a huge event if he ran well and gave her a meaningful update. And then you've got some of the, like, the emotional stories of, you know, this, the, you know, the connections and, you know, going to Vegas is in the sale and, you know, we're owned by Medallion and Abundanza and my racehorse. And you think, wow, how cool would that be for the industry to reach that many people in the ownership groups if she happens to win? And oh, by the way, it'll probably help with some, you know, appreciation in her, in her value, not to, if that takes place. You know, and there's so many horses that we're, you know, we're proud of. You hate to kind of single out a few of them. You know, we got a graduate like Gamine, who's, you know, short odds, that has been, you know, remarkable in virtually every start. So, you know, there's an awful lot of opportunities and a lot of rooting interest. But, you know, if I get one home, if I only get to get one home, I'd have to say I'll take She Dares the Devil.
Yeah, it would be fantastic to see her get the victory there, and she certainly is talented as they come. Mark Cassie joined us on our Breeders' Cup Countdown show earlier this week. He told the fantastic story about Got Stormy. That was really cool. Then you have Stiletto Boy, who this past week on my trainer talk show, which is presented by Fasig Tipton, I had the chance to welcome Stiletto Boy's trainer, Ed Mosier Jr., and he's a wonderful person. This is his first Breeders' Cup starter, Boyd, as I'm sure you're aware, and it would be wonderful to see Stiletto Boy pull off a victory. He's going to be a long shot in the Classic, but he was purchased by Ed's brother, Steve, out of the July selected Horses of Racing Age sale at Fasig Tipton, and Steve wasn't even there. He was doing it from his home in Washington State, and he was bidding online, Boyd. It's a wonderful story and great people, and it would be fantastic if Stiletto Boy runs well.
Sure, and that's, you know, that's the great thing about the Breeders' Cup, and honestly about the industry. We don't ever know where, you know, the next great horse is going to come from. It might come from modest breeding. It might come from, you know, a very wealthy billionaire who's spent a lot of money to achieve success. It might come from guys like you and I that have thrown together and 10 of us have gone in and bought a horse. Or, We never know, and that's the beauty of it, and that's what keeps the dream alive for everybody and makes it such a wonderful sport and a wonderful game.
Yeah, very well said. He's Boyd Browning, president of Fasig Tipton. Again, he is going to be back in Lexington because he's got to get ready for that Fasig Tipton Night of Stars sale coming up on Tuesday here in Lexington. Boyd, really appreciate the conversation as always. Best of luck with the Breeders' Cup runners and best of luck with the sale next week. Keep it rolling.
Thank you, Mike. We're going to do our very best. You know that.
All right. Boyd Browning here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, by the way, brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Whatever your day brings at the track or in life, reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Jellyfish Water is not a flavored water or a fitness water. It is a philosophy water. It's about being persistent in your efforts and getting to the winner's circle in life. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. All right, when I come back, it is time to welcome in our industry star of the week presented by Stuart Morris, and that is Ed Mosier Jr., who joined me this past week on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. You'll hear his story, and you'll hear the story of Stiletto Boy. It is fantastic. Stay with me. This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Nick Sallusto is your source for proving grade one success at every level. Nick's full-service equine management company includes Thorough Stock Training Center in Morriston, Florida, launching the career of grade one winner Bella Sophia, and Sallusto and Albina Bloodstock, specializing in sales representation, breeding, and private purchases, including Kentucky Derby winner Big Brown, champion Caledonia Road, grade one winners Mind Control, Arklow, Beach Patrol, and Violence, along with undefeated greatest stakes winner Cantharos. For more information, visit ThoroughStock.com. That's ThoroStock.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Multiple stakes winner and Canadian champion Pink Lloyd takes on five rivals in Sunday's $100,000 Ontario Jockey Club Stakes at Woodbine. Bred in Ontario by John Carey and owned by Entourage Stable, the Chestnut Gelding, a 27-time winner, has tallied 24 stakes victories and arrives at the 6-furlong test off his second straight win in the Grade 3 Bold Venture Stakes. Trained by Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Famer Robert Tiller, the 9-year-old son of Old Forester will once again have Rafael Hernandez in the irons. A 7-time Sovereign Award recipient, which includes 2017 Horse of the Year honors, Pink Lloyd continues to be a fan favorite at the Toronto Oval and beyond. Hernandez, a lifetime winner of nearly 2,800 races, is one of Pink Lloyd's proudest supporters. And being the pilot of Pink Lloyd is the ultimate adrenaline rush for the jockey who has 118 career stakes victories and is hoping Pink Lloyd can add to that impressive list on Sunday. "I talk to him even before the race starts," said Hernandez. "I tell him, you take me where you want to go and do your thing. I'm going to wait for you to switch your lead, and then I'll let you go. When we go in the gate, I tell him to relax. And after the wire, we both breathe, and I tell him, we did it, buddy. Good job." First post for Sunday's 10-race card is 12:55 p.m. Eastern. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at Woodbine TV.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
All the while, Jose Ortiz and Stiletto Boy have found another gear. Stiletto Boy coming to the final furlong, suddenly 2.5, 3 lengths in front. Flash of Mischief took a failed run at him. Late run from Dagetown, but too late and not enough to get Stiletto Boy, who's going to take him all the way in the Iowa Derby. Stiletto Boy won by 4. Flash of Mischief was second, Dagetown third. And Superstock.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. Bobby Newman with the call of the Iowa Derby and Stiletto Boy with a huge win earlier this summer. That was before he moved into the barn of Ed Mosier Jr., who will saddle him later today as an expected long shot in the Breeders' Cup Classic. It will be the first Breeders' Cup starter for Ed. It's a great story, and because of that, I thought it was appropriate that Ed Mosier Jr. be this week's Industry Star of the Week. This interview brought to you by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation and wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you, and with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, here it is. Ed Mosier Jr. looking back on what is a great story with Stiletto Boy.
Well, it's the biggest, you know, obviously the biggest purse I've ever ran for. I've always wanted to run in the Breeders' Cup or a classic race. And we had a chance here a few years ago with Stormy Lucy. She was on the also eligibles, and we didn't. We were really excited to get in, but we were stuck on the also eligibles and didn't get in. But so I'm real excited.
Do you even let yourself think ahead to Saturday afternoon and what it might be like if Stiletto Boy finds a way to cross the finish line first?
My whole life I've always dreamed of winning every race that I run in, but to me it's like I know it's a big purse, and I'm, you know, I've ran a lot of races. You know, like we've won almost 1,900 races, and it's, you know, it's a really, really big race. But the purse isn't that big a deal. It's the event, you know, more than it is the purse.
As you were saying that, I was thinking about, like, the Super Bowl. People will say, well, it's just another game. You have to approach it like it's just another football game. But it's really hard to do if you're involved in that particular game. Is it like that now for you, too? You try to say, hey, it's just another horse race, but, man, it's the Breeders' Cup Classic. So can you really look at it in that light?
I mean, my brother and I were both, like, really excited. I mean, we're talking every day about it. So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, definitely a bigger race than an average race. But, yeah, I visioned the race. I can see us win the race. I have a lot of horses. This horse is so good right now. And I keep telling my brother, I said, we got one more work. I mean, just hopefully he keeps just going as good as it's going right now. And that horse is as good as he can be right now. He, that's the way he is. And I don't say that about a lot of horses. And he's, like, really good right now. And Candace Romo's, he's real excited about riding him. He thinks he'll have no trouble doing the a mile and a quarter. And, we've kind of known which horses are going to be in there the whole time. And obviously super, super tough horses. And they've done way more than what my horse has done. But our horse is, like, coming to his best race, and never know what happens. I could see him win. I could see it.
The
horse is really, really good right now.
If he's going to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, first of all, he's going to have to make up 5 lengths on Medina Spirit, who beat him in the Grade 1 Awesome Again last time out. But I can imagine, Ed, that you had to be very proud of the way that Stiletto Boy performed in that race.
I was really proud because I know, like, the Medina Spirit ran awesome. I mean, he's obviously a really, really good horse, but the horses that ran behind us were really, really good horses too. You know, it's not like there's one good horse in there and we didn't beat him. He actually beat, you know, really, really good horses that were behind him. So I think 3 of those are going to be in the Classic also.
What would you say, and the game's going to change a little bit because the Awesome Again Stakes was 1 1/8. The Classic is 1 1/4. That changes the whole game. What would you say would be the 1 or 2 keys to victory for Stiletto Boy?
You know, he's number one. He's going to have to run probably faster than he's ever ran. I think the thing that may be able to help in the 1 1/4, looks like there's going to be a lot of speed. And Medina Spirit got a pretty easy lead the other day. I think they went 24-48 or something like that. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of speed in the Classic. And it might set up really good for Stiletto Boy. He's actually got a lot of speed, but we've just been trying to rate him off the pace. And so it's not like they're going to be able to run away from him. You know, he's got a lot of speed. And we could probably put him on the lead if we wanted to. But we're going to actually try, you know, do the same thing we've been doing, just try and get him to relax. And, you know, hopefully they'll go real fast up front and might set up good for us.
Yeah, and if nothing else, he is extremely versatile. You see his wins in, say, the Grade 3 La Jolla Del Mar on the turf where he went, he didn't win that race, but he was on the lead that day and came up a little bit short where he got tired at the end. But his Iowa Derby effort in July, he went wire to wire to win that race. And now, as you said, you're teaching him to rate off the pace a little bit and then finish. And that seems to be a good strategy for him, too. And it might be the winning formula coming up in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, we took blinkers off of him for his last 2 races, and that's why he's relaxing more. The first time we ran him, he was actually on the lead, and he was like almost like running off on the front end, you know. So we took him off just to take a chance and see if that would be better, and I think it helped a lot.
You talked about your brother, Steve Mosier, who is the owner of Stiletto Boy. He hasn't owned this horse from the beginning. He just purchased him at the Fasig Tipton sale in July, their Horses of Racing Age sale. He wasn't even at the sale when he bought him. I think that story is really cool, too. So tell me more about that.
Well, he bought it with Alistair Roden from Kentucky. He's a bloodstock agent. He was trying to find horses for my brother, and we've been trying to buy horses. You know, my brother always wants to get a good horse. He actually thought he had a deal with Exaggerator, you know, a few years ago before he even won the Santa Anita Derby. And the thing fell through, and, you know, he ended up, you know, what he ended up doing. But so my brother kept trying to buy, like, a really good horse. And, you know, it's, you know, like, you know, it's really, really hard to do. If it was only, if it only took money, everybody would do it. But,
yeah.
He called me that afternoon and said, I got a horse for you. He said, a horse just won the Iowa Derby. And I said, oh, really? And to me, I've never even told my brother this, but I think the reason he didn't tell me he was buying it, because he knew I would tell him, no, don't buy it. So I think that's the way that, I mean, I've never really asked him that, but that's probably what it was, because we turned down a lot of horses. We went back to New York to, led me to look at two horses for a lot of money, and I turned down both of them and came back home, and they were like $600,000, and neither one of them were very good, and neither one of them ever ran again after that. So it was a good thing we didn't buy them. But yeah, so anyway, he bought that horse, and I would, even after he bought it, I was still real leery whether he's going to be able to compete in California. You know, he won an Iowa Derby. I mean, he ran great, but, you know, right before that, he was like a nominal to two. And so he went from there to, you know, to come to California and run a graded stake. It's like a tough thing to do, and he's only three on top of it. And so I probably would have told him that's too much money for that horse, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it turned out to be a brilliant decision on his part, and it just goes to show you that two heads are better than one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're two heads and leave me out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, I'm sure you've made a lot of right decisions in your training career, too. This happened to be one that, you know, fell on the other side of the fence, and that's fine, because you'd love to be wrong with this one coming up in the Breeders' Cup Classic, wouldn't you?
Yes.
That would be spectacular.
Doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, no, you'll gladly be wrong. I mentioned that your brother wasn't even at the sale. Fasig Tipton launched online bidding during the pandemic in 2020, and that continued into this year. And he was sitting at home in Washington State bidding remotely and ends up getting Stiletto Boy, which I think is another cool angle to the whole story.
Yeah, that's exactly. I'm pretty sure he did the bidding himself, too. I don't think he had the bloodstock agent do it. I think he did it on his own, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, great stuff. And to be here with your brother now and to be running your first Breeders' Cup starter in a race like the Classic and do it with your brother, that has to be pretty special, too, Ed.
Oh, yeah. And I'm really excited. I think my brother's even more excited.
How did your brother get into racing?
Oh, him and I used to, well, he's 7 years younger than me, but we used to go to Long Acres. Actually, he went when he was real young, because I was like 18 and 19, so I guess he was 12. And he'd go around and pick up losing tickets, and then he'd sit in and take the program and look through them. He won like every day at the races, never lost, because he'd just find losing tickets. And he always like cash in, you know, a couple of show bets and stuff. But anyway, we liked the races, you know, right from day one. And, you know, I started training when I was 19 years old. And so my brother actually worked for me in the summers, you know, when he was at school. And I'd give him $10 a day.
Wow. Did he ever think of becoming a trainer, too?
I don't think he liked $10 a day. I think he was looking to make more money than that.
Well, I can't blame him on that one.
No, he's never wanted to train horses, but he loves the game, always has.
Fill in the blank for me. Winning the Breeders' Cup Classic this year would be what?
It would be a good chunk of money for me, for one thing. Winning the Breeders' Cup would be great. Honestly, it's not going to change my life. I'm going to still be doing the same thing I've been doing. it's really, really exciting. And actually, we're going to be real excited even this whole week because we're going to go all to the little parties and stuff, my wife and I and my brother. And my brother rented a house down there at Del Mar for the week. And it's a 7-bedroom house there that's right on Encinitas water, on the water in Encinitas.
Yep.
And so we're going to have a really nice week down there, and hopefully we can win the Classic.
Well, hopefully go win the Classic. That's what he's trying to do. Ed Mosier Jr., this week's Industry Star of the Week. And as you heard him say, he thinks he has a legitimate chance to win today. He's going to be a long shot with Stiletto Boy. We'll see. My thanks to Ed. That is just part of my interview with Ed Mosier Jr. You can hear the entire one-hour visit as part of my Trainer Talk Show presented by Fasic Tipton. The podcast is up on our website now, so head back over, take a listen at your leisure. He was fantastic. When I come back, I'll take a look at some historical dates in racing history, get you set for hour number three, which includes In the Room with Sean Clancy, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history, and I ask, they answer with Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill, but he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those?
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs the water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life, and it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, some notable dates in racing history taking place on this Saturday, November 6th. It was November 6th, 1946, that three fillies from Argentina arrived at Newark Airport, having made a journey of 8,250 miles. That was then the longest flight ever for horses. November 6, 1973, the Great Secretariat was paraded before 33,000 fans at Aqueduct as his final appearance at a racetrack before retirement to stud at Claiborne. And in 1993, on this very day, the Breeders' Cup was simulcast to England for wagering purposes for the very first time. And how about this? Happy anniversary to the brilliant Lure. It was that same event in 1993, 28 years ago, that Lure became the fourth horse to win consecutive Breeders' Cup events when he won the Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita after winning the previous year at Gulfstream. The Shug McGahee trainee retired with 14 wins from 25 starts and earnings of more than $2.5 million. Lure was pretty darn good. And those are historical dates in racing history. It applies to this November 6th in racing history. All right, coming up next is, of course, hour number three, and it's going to be a very busy hour, as you might expect. The first two have been busy. Hour three kicks off with In the Room with Sean Clancy. That comes your way momentarily. This week, Sean provides a really entertaining look at a couple memorable moments in Breeders' Cup history through the eyes of a jockey and as a reporter. 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, I once again welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. Continue listening to us right now, Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates across the country, and horseracingradio.net. I'm back after I pause 10 seconds for station ID.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The American Horse of the Year, and the Arc winner, our hands apart, with the Farrell Development Classic. On the outside, Saki, Tisnell fights on. Here's the wire, desperately close. Tisnell wins it for America.
Into the final furlong, there will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
California Chrome put to the test. Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with it? California Chrome, Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome, Arrowgate steals the show in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Wild again, desperately holding on to the lead. Slew of Gold is right there in between horses. Gate Dancer on the outside. What a finish. Wild again. Gate Dancer. Slew of Gold in between them. Those three in a dramatic finish. And here's the wire. Wild again does it.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number three of the Equine Forum rolling on this Breeders' Cup Saturday. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you back with me. If you missed any portion of the first couple hours of the program, my interviews with Nick Sallusto, with Dustin Fabian from Express Bet, you heard from Johnny V and Joel Rosario, Boyd Browning from Fasig Tipton, or Ed Mosier Jr., all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts there. And, of course, you can listen to them all on our website. Coverage today begins 3 o'clock Eastern. We are going to bring you 6 consecutive hours of Breeders' Cup coverage. You are going to hear every Breeders' Cup race exclusively on radio with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kurt Becker will be alongside me. Bobby Newman and Jude Feld will be near the paddock to keep you up to date on everything happening with the horses in the pre-race and then beyond. And you won't want to miss it. It's going to be a lot of fun this afternoon. 9 more championship races coming your way. I began the show with a few words. Miscommunication, confusion, incompetence, disgraceful. I think all of those are legitimate ways to describe what took place yesterday prior to the start of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf at Del Mar. It was Future Stars Friday, and a day where we were celebrating the two-year-olds, the future stars of our sport. All 5 juvenile races run yesterday. It was a day when we should have been celebrating and talking this morning about performances by Echo Zulu, who was absolutely brilliant in winning the juvenile fillies. Corniche, who was spectacular in going wire to wire under a great ride by Hall of Famer Mike Smith, the all-time leading jockey in the history of the Breeders' Cup. Yesterday, he showed you why. It's a day when those are the types of things that we should have been talking about. Instead, it was overshadowed by an incident that occurred prior to the start of the juvenile turf. And I told you at the beginning of the show, for those of you just joining us, that I had no problem, and I still have no problem, with Bob Baffert and his talented 3-year-old Corniche winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And if you had told me yesterday before the races started that Bob Baffert standing in the winner's circle, accepting his fifth trophy in that particular race, wasn't going to be the overwhelming storyline that came out of Breeders' Cup Friday, I would have told you were crazy. That had to be the storyline until the debacle that occurred before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. And once again, in a sport where we want to preach words like integrity and transparency, on one of our sport's biggest stages in front of an international audience, our sport once again fails to practice what it preaches. Those are just words. Folks, unless we're going to practice what we preach, those are simply just words. And we throw those words around in an attempt to build trust with the betting public. Yesterday destroyed trust with the betting public. Dustin Fabian from ExpressBet and FirstBet joined me in the first hour of the show. And he said, there are probably a lot of people waking up this morning with that bad taste in their mouth, wondering, debating whether they're even going to play the races today. It was an embarrassment to the sport of thoroughbred racing, the way that that was handled. The miscommunication that took place between veterinarians at the starting gate, stewards, and the tote department. To have a horse scratched out of a race, removed from the betting pools, then to say, well, no, the horse is okay. He's going to run, but he's going to run for purse money only. And, of course, the horse goes on to win. If Modern Games, who is the horse in question, if he had, and it's not his fault, he ran a fantastic race. Take nothing away from the horse. He did what he was supposed to do. Maybe even more impressive because of all the adversity that he had to deal with before the race. But if he runs last, it's a moot issue. We're not even talking about this. We're talking about what we can do in the future with that particular situation. Maybe it gets swept under the rug. But there are still 9 more championship races coming up today, and we're going to turn our attention to those races. I've been talking about them throughout the show. You've heard from several of the major players that are going to be involved in those races. But again, that incident that took place yesterday is inexcusable. It's inexcusable on the part of CHRB. I thought the Breeders' Cup statement that they released last night after the CHRB statement was very weak. It was passing the buck. It was a no-look pass in basketball is what it was. It was playing the game hot potato, throwing their hands up in the air, saying, hey, it's not our fault. Ask those guys over at CHRB. And ultimately, that's where it falls, 100%. But Breeders' Cup has to come out with a stronger statement than what they did, especially because of the fact that you had so much national attention with this. You had so many people that were so, quite frankly, ticked off at the way that this situation was handled. You got to protect the betting public, and you got to do better. As a sport, we have to do better. All right, busy third hour of the program coming up here. In the room with Sean Clancy is going to kick it off for us. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History coming up at 10:25 Eastern. That's presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at the end of the show, I ask, they answer, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin, 10:30 Eastern time. Unfortunately, we recorded that segment on Thursday because Dale was running a horse, which, by the way, ran huge yesterday. Dale was running a horse in the Breeders' Cup. He was so busy yesterday and today. We recorded that segment on Thursday. And because of that, I regret the fact that we won't be able to debate what happened yesterday, because I think Dale and Tim would have some very strong opinions, much like so many of us do. So just for the record, that's why that's not included in that segment, but it's a really, really fantastic segment. We do get into a lot of different things. All right, time now to get you to In the Room with Sean Clancy. This is a bit different. Usually Sean will sit down with a rider for a unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation. That is not the case this morning. Sean wanted to do something special for Breeders' Cup. So he takes a very unique look at a specific incident in Breeders' Cup history that I think you're really going to enjoy. It is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room at the Breeders' Cup. The first one for me was the first one for everybody, 1984. My dad was making nachos, chips and cheese in the microwave, and we were watching the best of the best from a farmhouse in Pennsylvania. NBC in all its glory, the sport in all its glory. A 14-year-old kid, a wannabe jockey, a couple of pony races in the books, that's all, watching my heroes. Don McBeth won the opener on Chief's Crown. The consummate professional, a jockey's jockey, gone way too soon. Eddie Delahousse, Fernando Toro, Yves Saint Laurent, Walter Guerra, Craig Perrett. In the classic, Pat Day implored wild again. Angel Cordero muscled Slew of Gold, and Lafitte Pinkai cajoled Gate Dancer. Photo finish, inquiry, chaos, brilliance. You knew the game would never be the same. It was a race, a day that left you winded, changed, stunned. The first I saw live was 1997 at Hollywood Park. By then, my riding career was stalling. I went to the Breeders' Cup to watch instead of riding a no-hoper at a meet called Stono Ferry in the sand dunes of South Carolina. The Blood Horse gave me an assignment, got permission for me to be in the jocks room, right there with my heroes. Seven races, two pages. It went like this. Shane Sellers called home after the Breeders' Cup and talked to his son Saban, who has Skipaway all over his room. Did you see Daddy win? Yeah, Daddy. What did you say? Come on, Daddy. Come on, Daddy. And then the phone went cold. Did you see Skippy? Yeah, Daddy. And then freezing. What's wrong? Why did Mikey ride him, Daddy? Why didn't you? It was Mikey's turn, son. And so it was. Smith rode Skipaway for the first time in the Breeders' Cup Classic on November 8th at Hollywood Park. His turn came because trainer Sonny Hine had fired Sellers as Skipaway's jockey after second in the Woodward Stakes 7 weeks earlier. Jerry Bailey took his turn, winning the Jockey Club Gold Cup 3 weeks before the Classic, but opted for Barron's on Cup Day, leaving Skipaway open for the richest race in the world. So Smith got the ride on Sellers' career horse, and a close friendship nearly became claustrophobic. Smith, 32, and Sellers, 31, are best friends, period. Despite riding on different circuits for most of the year, Sellers and Smith are family. They laugh together, they eat together, sing together. They think the best thing about Saratoga is that the other one is there. We got along right away. It wasn't like we had to get to know each other or anything, Smith said. We were great friends from the start, like now. They met at Oaklawn Park in 1983 while they attempted to be jockeys. We were two young guys just happy to ride the eighth race, or any race, Smith said. We never thought this would happen. We were just happy to be there. We used to talk about what it would be like to ride races like this. Now they know. Sellers checked off his first Breeders' Cup victory on Countess Diana and the Juvenile Fillies, while Smith won two on the card to top $7 million in career Breeders' Cup earnings. Skipaway provided enough emotion to make the $7 million as important as 7 cents. I rode him for me and him. I really thought that way, Smith said. When I stood up, I felt that it was for both of us. I feel bad for Shane that he wasn't on the horse, because the outcome would have been the same if he was. That's what I believe, that's what I know. But Smith's best friend was nowhere near Skipaway in the Classic. Sellers was on 76-1 shot Honor Glide, while his best friend rode the 9-5 big horse. Skipaway banged out a 3-year-old championship last year with Sellers as his first pilot. They won the Woodbine Million, Bluegrass Stakes, and Jockey Club Gold Cup. This year, Skipaway and Sellers captured the Suburban and the Massachusetts Handicap. But that's all history. Sellers is back riding 70-1 shots in the biggest race of the year and waiting for his time to come again. It just makes me a little mad. It's not good for a young man's career or his confidence, Sellers said before the race. I've got to keep going forward. It brings tears to my eyes when I think about it, because I want to be on the horse. Tears were in his eyes after the Classic. Sellers quietly got off Honor Glide, slipped through the tunnel, and one intrepid reporter at his side. The jockey couldn't speak. He just walked, expressionless, back to the safety of the jocks room, while Smith basked in Skipaway's zenith. Sellers retreated down below Hollywood Park. Smith may as well have been on top of it. We dream of days like this, Smith said. This is for all my friends and family, especially Shane. Sellers and Smith admit they're emotional, especially with each other, and especially after a race like this. Smith pumped the air as he crossed the wire, saluted the man above, and relished the moment. Smith let it out. Sellers feigned stoicism. "I was trying not to let it show. I was trying to go about my business," Sellers said. "Mark Guidry gave me a hug, and I couldn't help it. I broke down and cried a little." Sellers' peers rallied to his side. "The biggest thing that helped me was Chris McCarron came in my corner, shook my hand, and said, 'I know you're feeling bad, but I want you to pick up your chin because there's a Breeders' Cup Classic with your name on it, and I want you to believe that because that's the truth.' He was sincere about it," Sellers said. "It really touched me. I thought this guy didn't have to do that. I didn't want anybody to feel sorry for me." The devil could pity Sellers after Skipaway roared home in the Classic. Jockeys get replaced more often than diapers in a nursery. It happens all the time, but rarely with horses like Skipaway and in races like the Breeders' Cup Classic. Skipaway and Sellers were a team. They never reached a Cigar Bailey Mystique or a Ron Turcotte Secretariat fame, but Skipaway was Sellers' Secretariat, and Saturday he was Smith's. A jockey switch never caused more introspection. Sellers did enough for all the jilted jockeys in all the world. "I was so happy before the Classic because I won my first Breeders' Cup race. Then after, I couldn't feel that joy anymore. Finally, I sat down and said, 'You know, you're being selfish here. There's a lot of guys that would give anything to be in your shoes. You win your first Breeders' Cup and you're not happy? You gotta let it go. You gotta be happy for Mike. Be happy that you won your first Breeders' Cup.' And from that point on, it was all right. I went and took my shower." When the water drained and Smith stopped talking, the friends finally met. "He'll give me a big hug and be happy for me," Smith predicted before the race, if in fact Skipaway did win the Classic. The embrace was delivered quicker than a 1-5 shot, but behind closed doors. The two jockeys fell into the side room, away from all spectators, cameras, and applause. This wasn't Smith and Sellers' two jockeys. This was two friends. Two brothers who had just been through enough to send most to opposite corners of a ring. Instead, they're locked on each other. "I love you, man," spills out in both directions. A minute later, the door opens and two buddies emerge, deciding on dinner plans and what to do on Sunday afternoon. Good jockeys know how to switch sticks, dictate pace, and read tracks. They also know how to be resilient. "Win, lose, or draw, I couldn't pull against Skipaway and I couldn't pull against Mike," Sellers said. "I'm over it. He's not my horse anymore. And it wasn't my time. It was Mike Smith's day." And here we are, 24 years later. Smith is still going strong. Sellers is long since retired. Day and Cordero and Pinkai, Delahousse and Perrette are in the Hall of Fame. Shoemaker and Swinburne and Ettery, Romero and Gogo are gone. So many memories, so many moments. And still, my heroes go out there and make magic for all the world to see. Ride like the wind, jockeys.
Yeah, great stuff. My thanks to Sean for putting that together. And it's appropriate, too. When you hear him tell the story of Mike Smith and Shane Sellers and Skipaway and the way that that all came together in the Breeders' Cup Classic, we saw that yesterday on a little bit of a lesser scale. It wasn't the Classic, but it was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies and the brilliant Echo Zulu, who dominated that race and had dominated each of her three starts prior to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies yesterday. Echo Zulu had been ridden by Ricardo Santana Jr., Steve Asmussen's go-to guy. He had been aboard in all three of her career starts. Yesterday, it was Joel Rosario who was aboard for that win in the Juvenile Fillies. Very similar situation. I don't know if Joel and Ricardo Santana are close friends the way Mike Smith and Shane Sellers were going into that Classic years ago. But as I was listening to that piece, I was thinking about that situation yesterday and how difficult it had to be for Ricardo Santana to sit back and watch Echo Zulu, his filly, his mount, roll the victory with him not aboard. Can't be easy. That's all part of the game, though. You have to have thick skin. And as Sean mentioned in his piece, the jockeys are resilient. Ricardo Santana, guess what? He's back aboard for Steve Asmussen today in the big one with Max Player in the Breeders' Cup Classic. How fitting would it be if Ricardo were to guide Max Player to victory later today? That would take some of the sting out of what happened yesterday with Echo Zulu. That segment, In the Room with Sean Clancy, brought to you every week by the folks at My Racehorse and Fanticipate. I'm back after a word from both of them.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Pletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for use in an offering regulation. The part of offering statement, qualified by the securities and exchange commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A. They copy the offering circular, they get paid at MyRacehorse.com.
Well, if you thought that piece was good with Sean Clancy, just wait until you hear Kurt Becker and his Stroll Through Racing History coming up next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for three-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward.
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
Nick Sallusto is your source for proving grade one success at every level. Nick's full-service equine management company includes Thorough Stock Training Center in Morriston, Florida, launching the career of grade one winner Bella Sophia, and Sallusto and Albina Bloodstock, specializing in sales representation, breeding, and private purchases, including Kentucky Derby winner Big Brown, champion Caledonia Road, grade one winners Mind Control, Arklow, Beach Patrol, and Violence, along with undefeated greatest stakes winner Cantharos. For more information, visit ThoroughStock.com. That's ThoroStock.com.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was described as a blue-collar horse with a black-tie name, and 30 years ago this month, he won the Breeders' Cup Classic. His name was Black Tie Affair.
a lanky steel gray horse. Black Tie Affair was foaled in Ireland on April 1st, 1986. A son of Mizwaki and a grandson of legendary U.S. stallion Mr. Prospector, he was sent to the United States as a baby and was offered as a weanling at Keeneland's annual November breeding stock sale. The following year, he would go to public auction once again, selling for $85,000. Based at Philadelphia Park as a two-year-old in 1988, Black Tie Affair made his debut on September 28th that year by winning a 6-furlong maiden special weight. His second start, just 1 week later, resulted in a 7-length romp over Allowance Company at the same distance. He would later win a minor stakes at 7 furlongs before adding a stakes placing at the end of December at the Meadowlands. Black Tie Affair began his 3-year-old season by going winless in his first 4 starts, but he nonetheless came to the attention of Chicago-based trainer Ernie Polis. A former semi-professional football player who stood 6 feet tall and weighed 280 pounds, Polis was a native of the Windy City, having grown up in the neighborhood located at Taylor and Halstead, and in February of 1989, he would take a trip to Garden State Park in New Jersey, find Black Tie Affair, and give $125,000 for him on behalf of client Jeff Sullivan, a Chicago Pontiac dealer. A horse who specialized in sprint races, Black Tie Affair would win 4 of his 11 starts in Chicago in 1989, including a victory in the Grade 3 Sheridan Stakes over the one-turn mile at Arlington Park. The year would finish with an 8th-place result in the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Gulfstream Park, in a race which saw several horses eliminated from contention at the start. As a 4-year-old in 1990, Black Tie Affair pulled a $66 upset in Lexington, Kentucky at Keeneland Spring Meeting with a victory over reigning Breeders' Cup Sprint champion Dancing Spree in the 7-furlong Commonwealth Stakes. Later that year, he would finish 3rd at odds of 53-1 in the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Belmont Park. Polis raised eyebrows at the end of 1990 when he decided to stretch his star sprinter to the classic mile and a quarter distance in the Grade 2 Hawthorne Gold Cup. Black Tie Affair had seldom been beyond 1 mile. Farthest he'd ever been was 1 1/8 during his 3-year-old season that had resulted in a 6th-place finish. Dismissed as the 5th betting choice in the Hawthorne Gold Cup, Black Tie Affair responded by leading every step of the way under jockey Juvenal Diaz to win the $500,000 race, paying $18 at the mutual windows. Despite the success of the experiment, Black Tie Affair went back to sprinting to start his 5-year-old season in 1991. He scored a repeat victory in the Commonwealth at Keeneland, and he finished runner-up in New York in the Grade 1 Carter Handicap at Aqueduct. But as summer approached, Polis decided it was time to abandon the sprint races, instead planning a summer full of races at longer distances for his star pupil. And Black Tie Affair began to flourish. There was the Stephen Foster at Churchill Downs, the Michigan Mile at Detroit, the Cornhusker Handicap at Aix-Sarban, the Grade 1 Islin at Monmouth Park, and the Washington Park Handicap at Arlington. Black Tie Affair won all 5 races, each at a distance of 1 1/8, each in wire-to-wire fashion. And so, on November 2, 1991, Black Tie Affair came to Churchill Downs for the $3 million Breeders' Cup Classic in Louisville, Kentucky, riding a 5-race win streak. Jerry Bailey, who was 0-10 in Breeders' Cup races at the time, would ride the horse for the first time. Before a crowd of 66,000 on a sunny, cold day, Bailey sent Black Tie Affair immediately to the lead, and he was still there as the field turned for home. Tom Durkin gives us the call.
Unbridled is coming with his rally, but he's 7 lengths from the front with a furlong to go, and Black Tie Affair grimly trying to hold on to the lead. On the outside, Twilight Agenda. It'll be those two. Black Tie Affair on the inside, Twilight Agenda. Black Tie Affair and a front-running masterpiece of race riding here by Jerry Bailey does it.
The blue-collar horse with the Black Tie name had won America's richest horse race. And that victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic in the final start of his career would help Black Tie Affair finish the campaign as Horse of the Year. During his stallion career, including stints in Kentucky, Japan, and West Virginia, Black Tie Affair sired 35 stakes winners, including Grade 1 winners, Formal Gold, and Evening Attire. pensioned in June of 2009, he died in the summer of 2010 at Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Facility in Georgetown, Kentucky. He was 24. And so, as the Breeders' Cup World Championships take place this weekend at Del Mar, we pause to remember Black Tie Affair, the Irish-born, Chicago-based racehorse who won the Breeders' Cup Classic at Churchill Downs 30 years ago. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
And if you missed any of those Stroll Through Racing History segments or In the Room with Sean Clancy, you can head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can check out the podcasts of all of those. They are broken out individually with special pages for In the Room and special pages that are designed just for Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. So head over there now and check it out. Don't forget that Horse Racing's World Championships are indeed here, and you can bet the Breeders' Cup risk-free with TVG. That's right. New TVG players can get started with a risk-free bet up to $300. That means you'll get up to $300 back if your horse does not win. Think about that. The TVG app is so easy to use and gives you all the tools you need. You'll get access to free picks, analysis, and wagering advice from industry experts. Day two of the Breeders' Cup takes place today, so now is the perfect time to give TVG a shot. Join us for coverage this afternoon and just sign up with promo code HRRN for your chance to bet risk-free up to $300. That's promo code HRRN to place your first bet risk-free. That's a win bet risk-free exclusively on TVG.com/HRRN and the TVG app. Age, residency, and other eligibility restrictions apply. New users only. Refund issued as a non-withdrawable site credit that expires after 30 days. You can see terms at TVG.com. And if you do have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. I'm back with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. I ask, they answer. You won't want to miss it. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million. Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when blood vessels in the lungs rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressure on the inside of the vessels and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal pressures, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside. See the science at flarestrips.com.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including these standout performers.
And Dipping In will steal this one. And do you see it? Dipping In on top by Link.
Fastest in Queen Nakia, here's the finish. Gibberish wins the treasure chest.
Out of a Galileo mare, this dual surface star has sired juvenile stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
Weanling shopping? Buy Maryland breds and take advantage of one of the most innovative programs in the country. Breeders earn a 30% share of purses on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing in the top three, and 15% in all stakes when your Maryland bred finishes in the top three, capped at $100,000. Owners earn a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing first, second, or third, and developers get a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland breds in the top three spots. Visit MarylandThoroughbred.com for details.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Serengeti Empress chased by Gamine, and here's Gamine striding forward on the outside of Serengeti Empress. Sconson goes third down toward the rail and is still five from the front. Gamine in the final furlong, now at the 16th pole. Gamine, John Velasquez rolling on home to win the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. All Gamine. They've got to get Channel Maker. Let's see what Magical can do now. And then Arglow and Tarnawa. Tarnawa is running fast down the center of the course. Tarnawa past Magical has caught Channel Maker. Tarnawa moves on by Tarnawa and Colin Keane to win the Longines Turf.
Well, that's our very own Kurt Becker with the call of last year's Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint and Breeders' Cup Turf. Gamine and Tarnawa among the defending champions we're going to see in the Breeders' Cup later today at Old Del Mar. Both expected to be heavy favorites in their respective races. And that is going to be one of the topics that we will discuss on today's show as I once again welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin to a special Breeders' Cup edition of I Ask, They Answer. But guys, before we dive into the various Breeders' Cup topics, I want to spend a few minutes remembering jockey Miguel Mena. The 34-year-old rider was, of course, killed in a pedestrian accident in Louisville this past Saturday night. And for those of us who knew Miguel, he was one of those athletes where you can say, yes, he was fantastic at his job, but he was an even better human being. And Dale, I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Yeah, Miguel and I were very close from the time he came to Kentucky. He's been like a son to me. And it's a very sad day in racing. It's a very sad day for humanity. This kid was just such a good soul. Came from dirt floors in Peru to be a leading rider in America. And people don't know all the stuff good that he's done for others behind him in Peru to get him over here, get him visas, get him licensed. He was coming to me all the time to another jockey needed a shot. And he just looked after people. Of course, he had his demons like the rest of us, and but he worked on himself all the time, and it's just such a sad situation. He was a good soul, good person.
Yeah, Timmy.
Yeah, no, I didn't know Miguel that well. I think I interviewed him a couple times, but he was always so polite, always a professional, and he just had that thing about him where you knew he was a good guy. If you didn't. You didn't know him that well, but you just knew he was a good guy, just the way he carried himself. And I was just shocked when I heard, and again, I didn't know him that well, but it hit me a little bit hard too, because this guy seemed like a great family man, and you know, the two little daughters, and it's just a very, very sad thing for racing. Anytime it's a sad thing.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, though, that just, when you left him, your day was better. And they're few and far between people like that. And you know, it brings up a bigger issue that needs to be discussed later on, and that's, you know, mental health of people working in this business, especially jockeys, all the stress that they live under. You know, when you live by winning and competing, and you're critiqued every day by your peers and the people you work for and the media and the stress that goes along with that, and on top of not being able to eat and I think this should open the door for bigger discussions down the road for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, and Dale, you're right. Every time you left a conversation with Miguel, you always felt good about yourself and about the sport. He was always very positive and very upbeat. And, you know, I got to know him from the media side of things. And then as I got involved doing work with the Jockeys Guild and the PDJF, I got to know him a little bit more. And I don't claim to be close with him like you, but I just remember there was enough times that I would reach out to Miguel. He would get right back to me. We would have a conversation, whether it be on air or in the jocks room. And it, just one of those people that really, really loved the sport, loved the game. And like I say, a better person than he was a rider.
Just good energy about him.
Yep. Yeah, well, he will be missed, and a very sad occurrence there last Saturday in Louisville, Kentucky. All right, with that, we still have racing going on today, and it kind of puts things in perspective. We talk about the Breeders' Cup, and yeah, it's a championship event, and it means an awful lot to so many people in our sport. But in the end, it is just a series of horse races. But here we go, guys. Topic number one. What would be the most surprising result later today? Gamine losing the filly and mare sprint, or Tarnawa getting beat in the Breeders' Cup turf? Timmy?
Well, for me, it's easy because I picked Gamine to win. I didn't pick Tarnawa to win. So it's an easy one for me. Gamine has been so dominant her whole career, winning 9 out of 10. She just goes the lead, and she does, and no one gets to her. I would be shocked if she doesn't win this race because I think she's the dominant in her division. And Tarnawa, I mean, I think she's raced three times since the Breeders' Cup, and second in the Arc de Triomphe. I mean, she's coming in here with credentials and definitely the one to beat. But the thing about the Europeans over here, the people in the U.S. don't follow it as much as they will follow the horses that are stateside. So I think, without a doubt, if Gamine were to lose, that would be a bigger shock.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that Gamine's not only dominated the class, the field of sprint fillies, but you got a couple of the better ones that just didn't even come out here, like Sconson and Neil Pessin's filly that would have been contenders that just stayed home. They've had enough of chasing Gamine. And the other race is a tough, you know, it's a much tougher race. So I think definitely the biggest upset would be if Gamine was to lose.
Yeah, and Gamine facing a very short field. Of course, Tarnawa going to have to compete against a full field in the Breeders' Cup turf. But, Dale, you can't get into any trouble in a short field, right?
Oh, yeah, I've said that a lot of times and gotten in trouble all the way around. what can happen will happen. But I think Gamine she's facing a good bunch, but not all the best of that division. So it's her race to lose, definitely. The other, you know, going and running those turf races, good horses, those to me are the most difficult to be consistent on. And that's why her record is so good. It's so impressive that she's been so good for so long, running against top horses on the grass. But they're two great horses. Either one of them loses is going to be a shocker.
Yeah, yeah, I think we all agree, though, Gamine would be the bigger shock, the bigger surprise of those two if she were to get beat in that filly and mare sprint. All right, moving on to topic number two. If we were to go ahead and create a race of the century here this morning and we were to put every Breeders' Cup Classic winner in the starting gate together, if we could ever do that, who would be favored and who would win? Who wants it first?
I got this one first. I'll take this one.
All right.
I think who would be favorite? It's a tougher question than who we think would win. But for the win side, I'm going with Arrogate. And on the loser side, I'd probably take – I mean, the favoritism may go to the filly because she was the favorite – one of the favorite horses of racing at her time.
Zenyatta.
And yep. I think I might make her the favorite just because she had such a cult following, but Arrogate to me. And I'm not basing it as much on Breeders' Cup as I've never seen a horse do what he did in Dubai World Cup. I think he may be one of the greatest horses of our generation any of us have watched run. And for a horse to overcome what he did and run the way he did in Dubai, when he was at his best and assuming they would all be at their best, I mean, I loved a lot of them. Ali Sheba was a great one, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I would go Arrogate, winner, Zenyatta favorite.
Jeez, Dale, what a sentimental guy you are, picking the filly. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the girls.
This is, Jesus, Tammy must be standing next to you.
she's actually out hiking.
But you know, if I were to make a line on this, I might have co-favorites. I might make Cigar and American Pharoah the co-favorites in the race, because I think those two might have been the shortest price favorites in the history of the Breeders' Cup Classic, I believe. But I would pick Ghost Zapper to win it.
Ooh.
Because Ghost Zapper.
Yeah.
The in 2004, I mean, he ran a hole in the wind when he won that race, and I think he would put away American Pharoah on the front end, and then he would hold off Tiznow, Curlin, and Zenyatta in a blanket finish.
Wow. How about that? Wilkin coming with the full handicapping analysis.
Yeah, let me just say, again, he has shown me up as doing his homework. the shortest prices where I had no idea. And then he was gigging me a little bit, I think, with Ghost Zapper, because whoever doesn't know it out there is I ran second in that Breeders' Cup Classic in my first Breeders' Cup appearance with Roses in May.
Yep.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
You did it. You brought up enough just bringing Ghost Zapper up. I know that was a little gig, but I can handle it.
Well, you know, you're out there in California. I'm here in Albany, New York. I should be out in California.
You should be right here with us. No, but you're right about Ghost Zapper. He definitely – that was probably as good a field of horses ever assembled for the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I told Bobby that morning, I said, I got you. He said, you'll see at the quarter pole. Well, I told my jock to sit – Johnny to sit right on his hip and aggravate him all the way around there. And he gets tired of us, he'll get mad and back up. Well, he got mad, all right, and ran away from us. It was an amazing performance by Ghost Zephyr.
You know, yeah, and you know, just some of the – I mean, you could make a case for just about all of them. I mean, Sunday Silence would even mention him.
Yeah.
You know, this is just it's a Ferdinand. I mean, that you have these horses that ran such great races in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and, you know, maybe we'll see another one later on today.
One thing's for sure, Tim. I know Dale's not intimidated by American Pharoah.
No, no, he never crossed my mind. I know he's beatable.
Yeah, I think you would know that one, Dale.
Yeah, but let me tell you what, I'm one of the biggest American Pharoah fans of all time. I will say that, too, because I watched him work his first work ever at the McCatton Farms when he was a two-year-old, and I told Mrs. Ida at that point, I'd never seen anything like it. It was just such an amazing performance.
Well,
he was like a four-year-old.
I remember talking to you Travers Week, you know, as confident as you were with Keen Ice, you were also – very, very, very impressed with American Pharoah.
Well, and show him all the respect in the world.
And what he had done for racing. I mean, you gushed over him. I remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you this. Not one person has ever come up to me and say, American Pharoah beat you six times. But they always come up and say, they all talk about the Travers when we won.
It's a great way to look at it.
That's the fastest fastest you ever ran, Dale.
Carrying Tammy the whole way, and I got halfway there and realized I was too fat and out of shape to be running that far carrying her.
But you were moving like a tremendous machine for a while.
For a while, but I hit a wall.
All right, I'm really curious to get your thoughts on this one, guys. Topic three, over the past 13 years, this is pretty incredible. The Breeders' Cup has been held in either California or Kentucky. That's it. The 2007 Breeders' Cup at Monmouth in New Jersey was the last time that the event was held in a state other than those two. Now, to put that into perspective, in the first 23 years of the Breeders' Cup, the event was held in seven different states with one international venue at Woodbine up in Canada. So my question to you, does the Breeders' Cup need to go back to a bigger rotation outside of just California and Kentucky?
Take the lead, Tim.
Well, you know, people might say, yeah, it should, because it should move around. But, you know, when they go to California, you're guaranteed of great weather every year, even though I guess it's been cold out in San Diego, hasn't it, Dale?
A little chilly, yeah.
But, you know, it hasn't been a Gulfstream forever because they can't accommodate the fans anymore. And New York hasn't had it since 95. I wish it would come back to New York. I hope it comes back to New York because New York is a mecca of horse racing. And, you know, Kentucky, I mean, what can you say? Kentucky is the birth of horse racing. And, you know, whenever you go to Churchill Downs and Keeneland, they do a bang-up great job of putting on the World Series of horse racing. So you can't argue with that. From a media standpoint, I mean, because this is the first year I haven't gone to the Breeders' Cup since, well, I didn't go in 17 because I got knee surgery, but this is the first time I haven't gone because, you know, media doesn't travel well for these races anymore. Last year at Keeneland, I was the only newspaper outside of Kentucky that was there, which was shocking to me, and I don't know how much media is out there other than the Forum, the trades, as far as newspapers go. I wish it was more. It used to be that was a big, 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 big event for media. It isn't so much anymore. and I wish it would come back. But as far as, yeah, I'd like to see it move around a little bit so fans around the country that don't have to travel every year. But I don't know if it will, because I think they're pretty much the Breeders' Cup likes California and they love Kentucky.
Well, I agree. I think that when the Breeders' Cup, the original charter for Breeders' Cup was to take the great racing to the people. And it was to move it all around the country. But then you got a place like Gulfstream Park. They knocked down the big, beautiful building they had, and they got three restaurants next to a racetrack. It'd be almost impossible to have a Breeders' Cup there. The New York situation, they had great Breeders' Cups, but the last time I was in Belmont for the Breeders' Cup, it was so darn cold, and the place is not winterized at all. Now, when they redo the place like you're talking about, it may be different, but it wasn't the best environment for the racing fans. I mean, it was freezing cold, and there wasn't but 100 tables inside of a heated area.
Right.
And Aqueduct, are not going to give up their casino parking for us to have a Breeders' Cup there. So logistically, it's become a tough thing for them to move it around to other states. I hope someday that they find other places that they want to take it. I thought it was fun in Lone Star. Of course, a lot of people said it was too small. It was good where we were, but out in the bleacher sections wasn't good. And it's hard for 2 days of racing to expand your facility to accommodate all the people that are here. So I think we've outgrown a lot of venues, and a lot of venues shrunk on us.
I mean, a lot of people have said to me that it should be at Saratoga. Yeah, it's a sweet idea, but it could never happen because...
No, if it doesn't snow a foot, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, they would be at the mercy of the weather, and, you know, you'd have to open up the... It's a summer track. You're not going to have people in the backyard at Saratoga for the Breeders' Cup. That would be ridiculous.
Right.
And I just think that, you know, they'd have to open it up and bring more people up to work and open the barn area up for, what, a week? 2 weeks?
Yeah.
It just wouldn't work.
Yeah, it's got to be a southern state if they're going to try to move it around. These northeastern locations like Belmont Park, yes, they're set up for it, but even in Kentucky here, guys, Churchill Downs, they have great attendance there, great wagering. It can handle the amount of people that are going to be there, but the weather can be very, very dicey here in Kentucky at that time of year.
It can be, but Churchill's set up for that. They've got all the indoor seating that you could want.
Yep.
Heated areas and places to escape from. Like Belmont just doesn't have that. And, we're going to talk about the greatest races ever later. And that was, to me, was a bad weather day at Breeders' Cup. But you're right. Kentucky can have bad weather, which the Euros don't mind it being cold and a little bit drizzly. But the fans would be well protected from the weather if they're at Churchill Downs.
Yeah, Florida makes the most sense, Florida doesn't have a place to host anymore.
Okay. And you want to be able to have an event that it's going to be a fair playing field for the horses, too.
Right.
Go ahead.
You know, a place I keep hearing them talk about, and I think it would work, is the fairgrounds, which would be interesting to take it to Louisiana. And they'd have to expand the facility some, but that's a pretty good size racetrack. The weather's good that time of year in New Orleans, and I think that would be an interesting place to have it.
Yeah, and there was talk at one point of maybe Hialeah, that the Breeders' Cup should buy Hialeah and make it a permanent venue for the Breeders' Cup every year. Obviously, that's not going to happen, but that was, if you were going to go to Florida, that might be the only place that you could go.
That'd be a beautiful Breeders' Cup if you could do it.
Yeah. All right, final topic before we wrap things up. We're down to the final couple minutes, guys. So if you could go back and attend just one Breeders' Cup, which one would it be?
Jim, you want?
I'll take it first.
Okay.
I think I would go back in the hot tub time machine to 2010 at Churchill when Blaine beat Zenyatta in the Classic. I mean, it was a great day of racing for sure, but the thing that stuck out in my mind the day after that race, John Sheriffs brought Zenyatta out, and he kept her out. And anybody that wanted to come up and see her, he allowed them to walk right up to her, pet her, just have their pictures taken with them. And this went on for a long time because I remember being out there doing work and I saw it going on early in the morning. Then I came back there and it was still going on. I mean, if you're talking about a guy that really understood how much this horse meant to so many people and he wanted to share it with her because, that's the last time she ran. That was going to be it for her. But that stuck out. That's still resonates to me of the job that John Sheriffs did with the way he shared Zenyatta with the people.
Yeah,
you're right. That was a great Breeders' Cup, and there's so many of them that we could talk about. But in my mind, there's one that sticks out, and I don't think there can be any argument. That was the greatest Breeders' Cup in history. It was 1988, Churchill Downs. It was one of those cold, rainy days. We're talking about the weather in Kentucky. Yeah. You had two Kentucky Derby winners, maybe three Kentucky Derby winners on the card. You had personal ensign Nell and Winning Colors, who had won the Derby, on the wire to remain undefeated. You had Easy Goer, that was New York's horse, running second as a short favorite in the juvenile. And you had the Derby winner in darkness almost, winning the Classic in Ali Sheba. And it was a great Classic, and they all hit the wire together. And it was hard to even tell. It had gotten so dark in Churchill and cold and drizzly. It was a great backdrop when you look back on it. To me, 1988, I think even Wayne Lucas, that's the year he ran 1-2-3-4 in the juvenile fillies. I
mean, yeah.
The 88 Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs, in my opinion, there's never been one like it.
All right. Well, there you go.
Who says Dale Romans doesn't do his homework?
He does his homework, see? Yeah, he plays possum in the beginning of the show.
That's off the top of my head.
All right, guys, we're about out of time here. I got to get to a commercial break, but appreciate it. Enjoy the Breeders' Cup today, and we'll do this again next week. I ask, they answer.
Thanks. You next week.
All right, thanks guys.
Thanks, Dale.
I'm back to wrap up the show right after this. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, be sure to follow all of the Breeders' Cup news and stories, plus race entries, results, replays, sales coverage, industry news, and more with Blood Horse Daily, awarded as the best equine-related publication by the American Horse Publications. For the second year in a row, you can have the newsletter delivered to your email each evening. It is free. Sign up and view today's Blood Horse Daily at bloodhorse.com/daily. All right, well, my thanks to all the guests for making this show possible, including Nick Sallusto and Dustin Fabian, who joined me in the first hour of the program. You heard from Johnny V and from Joel Rosario in advance of their clashes in the Breeders' Cup Classic later today. Boyd Browning from Fasig Tipton, Ed Mosier Jr., who was our industry star of the week. My thanks to Sean Clancy and Kurt Becker for their contributions, and Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. You just heard them with I Ask, They Answer. If you missed any portion, head to our website, check out the podcast, and join us 3 Eastern for exclusive radio coverage of every Breeders' Cup race this afternoon. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for my beautiful wife, Michelle, handling all of our social media this morning, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you 3 Eastern. And by the way, go Steelers.